don't see him, but maybe we will soon hear.
He's here and he's waving. He's at
end. Yeah, I'm on. I'm
there you are. Okay.
Sorry.
How are you, Ryan?
I'm good, Sean. I'm missing our conversations.
Likewise, friend.
I'm glad that you're doing well and liking Houston. At least it sounds like so far.
Yeah.
Summer.
It's good. Trust me though, I miss Arizona, so I'm gonna try to get back as often as I can. It's a great state.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Okay, it is 8:04. Let's call the meeting to order and a roll call, please.
Hardy.
Here.
Dinar.
Present.
Kappas.
Present.
Murphy.
Present.
Taylor.
Present.
Ms. Berg and Dr. Seaman are absent. And I didn't call their name because I knew they were absent. Sorry. And then for staff, we have the AADA and AADB meeting today. Well, it started yesterday through the weekend, Saturday and Sunday included. Sherry and Christina are attending that. So just Yasmin and myself are attending for staff. And I'm not sure who the Attorney General is present. It's going to be Scott Mary.
Good morning, Ryan. Scott Donald on behalf of the Attorney General's office.
Awesome. Thanks, Scott. And then I notified Heather early this morning, or not early, but about 30 minutes ago, Jessica Thomas, the board's rules writer, She had something come up early this morning. She is going to be away for a bit. She's hoping to log into the meeting at 8:30 and wanted to send her sincerest apologies for not being here at the end. And I said that I would try to hold the wolves at bay and see if we, because I don't want to screw stuff up. So, but we'll do what we can. I have the Word version that we can write in together. So if you wanted to go backwards and look it over anything that you had a conversation about before, I'll leave it up to you, Heather.
Thank you. So for the next agenda item, call to the public. Just a warning, after I do this call to the public and read the little blurb, I'm going to switch to, we have two Wi-Fi connections, and I'm going to switch to my second one while we're waiting for the call to the public because I may get kicked off and have to rejoin. So just to warn you, if there's a lag, that my internet is running a bit slow, so I'm going to switch to my other one. So agenda item number two, call to the public. Pursuant to ARS 38431.01 subsection H, the group may make an open call to the public during the public meeting, subject to a reasonable time, place, and manner restriction to allow individuals to address the public body on any issue within the jurisdiction of the public body. However, members of the group are not allowed to discuss or take legal action on matters raised during an open call to the public unless the matters are properly noticed for discussion and legal action. The group, however, may ask staff to review a matter or may ask that a matter be put on a future agenda. And that being said, is there any call to the public? And now I'm going to switch.
Ryan, can you put the agenda up there and the other information now?
Yeah.
Dr. Taylor.
Okay, I am back. I did not hear anybody. That is correct. Okay, let's go to agenda item number three, review, discussion, and possible action on committee meeting minutes. Why don't we take them separately first for A, B, and C, does anybody have any changes? And then we can approve them in total.
I have a couple of small corrections. I don't know how significant they might be, but... So on April 9th, I was present as a guest, and you have me listed as vice president of the Arizona Dental Hygienists Association, and I am not. So I am just advocacy chair.
So this is Ryan. Would we put advocacy chair in lieu of vice president, but still
yes.
Leave DHA.
And still lead the ADHS, yes. Right. Still lead the Arizona Dental Hygienists Association. And then right below that, I see John McDonald as being a lobbyist for the American Dental Association, and I believe that is the Arizona Dental Association, and the same change would be for Sean for the Arizona Dental Association.
We tried to give everybody a promotion.
I know, it's wonderful. I wish I could keep it. And I did notice we've got this random word absent up there and in under group members.
I think that's just maybe a place setter, Deb, to let them know who would be absent normally. It might be like a template, so then they put
okay.
who's all absent, right. If there ever is anyone absent.
Yeah. And then my name is misspelled twice on page 3 of these minutes. Just dropped a P.
And where?
On page 3
okay.
of these minutes. Okay, so right at the top, yeah, there's an extra P or missing a P, and then down toward the bottom, it's again. There it is again.
Yasmin, are you good with that?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
And then I didn't find any corrections or anything with the 23rd, but on the 27th, on the first page, again, well, to Sean's point, if that's a placeholder, I think it was Morgan Berg who was absent, so on that day, by my notes. And then on page 7, I've got promoted again to Dr. Kappas. Woohoo!
Can I stop before we go to page 7? It's again American Dental Association and not Arizona.
Thank you. And that actually might show up on the 23rd too. Thank you, Mr. Dinar. I did kind of overlook that. It's probably a consistent error through the 3.
Doctor.
Love the promotions, but
let me look at July 3rd.
So Sean's not there, and I guess John wasn't there signed in as a guest. So, yeah, he wasn't even listed there.
Yeah, I'm up above because at that point I was a group member.
Right.
And, yeah, John couldn't.
Right. So yours would be correct, and since John wasn't listed as a guest, then we're good there. Yeah, very good.
Okay, cool.
And don't worry, Sean gets misspelt all the time, Ryan, so any way you choose to spell it's fine by me.
I have an older brother. Unfortunately, he passed away. His name was spelled exactly the same way, so hopefully it never happens. But.
So he spelt it right, as I like to say. Good to know.
Exactly.
Thank you. Any other corrections? And is there a motion to accept the minutes as amended?
This is Dr. Taylor. I move that we accept the minutes.
Dinar seconds.
For both A, B, and C.
Perfect. As amended?
As amended. Thank you.
Perfect. Thank you. Any discussion? We have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries. Okay, agenda item number 4. Well, we tried to hold off as long as we could, Ryan. Notice of proposed rulemaking. I do have something. Yeah, we did good. I do have something before we go into where we left off. If you guys remember, I've been doing this every time, of things that needed to be followed up on from previous meetings. And I'm going to apologize guys because, again, I've been working off of the same packet that I print out. And so the page numbers that I'm going to say no longer correlate with what's in the packet. But I can tell you that under Article 4 for the fees, under R411403, subsection B, it was about the following license-related fees are established and are expressly authorized by statute. The board shall collect the following fees. And then it had a possible change of paid by credit card on the board's website or by money order cashier's check, which we were wanting to strike. Wait, I'm sorry. Forgive me. That was already, we took care of that one. It was under B1, the jurisprudence examination fee. And we wanted to come back to this after the board decided what to do with the jurisprudence exam.
So let me jump in here real quick then. So the board made, oh my gosh, I'm not even sure. So we tried to collect all of these and go forward with to GIRC all at the same time to try to do them all simultaneous. We've decided to split that up. It makes it easier for everybody, including GIRC, to review each package separately. And so the board made a motion several months ago about removing the requirement to take the jurisprudence exam as part of the application process and then just to attest. The applicant knows that there is a standard of conduct that they're held to through statute and rule, and that they are aware of it, have read or reviewed it and understand it. Along with that test, there's a fee involved, and the board wanted to basically remove that as a requirement to application and ultimate licensure. That route that it goes has to go through a legislative process. Yasmin, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe next week sometime, I think it's the second or third, we meet with the House to discuss to see who would like to sponsor that bill or who would they promote to sponsor that bill. So I think we'll still have to come back to that at some point in the future. But hopefully, because it's just a minor issue, the board can maybe handle it outside of we don't need to continue this group for that matter. And I think, does that answer the question? Yeah.
No. Sorry. Okay, great. No, that handled it for me. I just had that was something that needed to be followed up on. And then I just had one more thing that is under Article 15, Complaints, Investigations, Disciplinary Action. Under R411-1503, Initial Complaint Review, where it's A1, the board personnel should notify the complainant and licensee certificate holder or business entity that we were wanting to see, about how we were going to do it by certified mail, email, that is this legally allowed since it needs to show that it's been served, and staff was going to work with legal counsel to review that.
I thought this got worked out. Scott, you got thrown into something that's a little bit maybe hard to understand, but this under this that I have up on, I don't know if you even have this because you're attending telephonic, but there is a R411 1503, it's called Initial Complaint Review, and I believe this deals with business entities, and so Seth at the last meeting had clarified that we were trying to take a couple of things out, and and I think that we were taking them out based on my interpretation of this rule. But at the end of the day, Seth said no, because this is specific to business entities. I think that this is not the total complaint review on individual complaints that come in against a dentist. And so this is the way it should be handled through a rule. So I think we're good on this, Heather, but I'll try to talk to Scott maybe later today.
Yeah.
About this. Go ahead, Scott.
No, I was just going to say, yeah, we can certainly touch base after the meeting if you'd like.
Okay. I'm going to make a note.
Perfect. Thank you. Those were the only couple things. Okay, so that being said, I have in my notes that we ended on August 27th on R4-11-1601. We had started discussing it, but we ended up tabling it, and so we could come back to it since our meeting was coming to a close.
And if you give me a second, I'm going to get out of this view and go to the Word version so I can maybe make real-time changes. Until Jessica gets here.
Sounds good. Thank you. Okay, and this is, and I missed the beginning. You said this is where we're going to, I see the where it says this is where we left off, and what, do I need to scroll up to the top next page? Yes, 1609, that's correct.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we started discussing this, but we needed to come back to it. So we were talking about possibly striking affiliated practice all the way down A, B, and C because that doesn't apply to dental therapy.
Deb, can you go over your reason for wanting to strike it again?
Well, we did have some replacement language,
right.
But I think Heather said it pretty succinctly that all of these things in here applied to affiliated practice agreements, but they don't apply to the written collaborative practice agreements. For example, A has to do with completing some additional or different kinds of continuing dental education, and that is specifically identified in statute that the board needed to do, and that doesn't hold true with the collaborative practice agreement for dental therapists. There is no statutory directive to address CE requirements other than what would normally be required for dental therapists, which, of course, we've already got that worked out. B is, A and B, I guess, is the kind of both our continuing dental education and how that gets handled. And then C would be to complete an affidavit form to determine that there's compliance. And something like that could still be, you know, held on to in terms of compliance with the what is required in statute to be in a written collaborative practice agreement. That element could still be included, I think, and apply to written collaborative practice agreements. We just might want to change the statutory citation she corrected it here anyway. She did. No, she didn't. So even in this document, the statutory citation is incorrect. It's referring to something else. So,
Deb, you provided alternative language, and we can
right
comments.
Right,
is that something that you're still willing to push forward? Because I'm looking at that language, I didn't have much issue with it, and I'd be fine. You swapping
right
what is currently there with what you've provided. My only request would be we would say where it says CPR, and if we scroll down, Ryan.
Yeah.
That we're in subsection A2. Mm-hmm. So where it says, and I know some people on this call will appreciate this word more than others, cardiopulmonary recitation. So if we put then behind that in parentheses CPR and then do a comma including with an automated external defibrillator, AED, I think we're on the same page then, Deb. And we talked about that when we met months ago.
We did. And I think what she has in there, it has that language. She just has it maybe reversed from what you said, cardiopulmonary resuscitation, and then it says CPR afterwards and an automated external defibrillator, AED. Mm-hmm. Do you want it reversed or?
No, because I think, and Ryan, would you be able to zoom in on that? I'm going to have to call my optometrist and get this prescription revised, but I'm really having a hard time here. I think it's after the CPR, yeah, so maybe that was already included. If we can do a comma, let me see what I was thinking. Okay, yeah, it just flipped it, so I'm fine with the way it is now.
Yeah, I think we had made that correction. And I think if I recall our discussion, I think Jessica had some questions about, and I think even some of the group members had questions about item B, which says the staff shall review the affidavit, and I think there was some concerns with using the term affidavit. Mm-hmm. I'm not real sure, and we may have to wait till Jessica joins us to revisit some of her concerns with how this is set up, and or should it be set up more like it was set up for dental hygienists and something that says to perform dental therapy services under a written collaborative practice agreement pursuant to a dental therapist shall, you know, rather than starting it off with saying, you know, the dental therapist shall submit a signed affidavit. So I think we were in that conversation, and I'd like to hear from staff too, as far as how to administer this, you know, what's appropriate to ask the staff to do, how do they do it with affiliated practice, how does that all work? And just apply some of the same standards, if you will, to this. So
this is Dinah, if I may. Sorry, before Brian says anything. So my concern with subsection B is sort of the practical realities of what needs to happen from the staff's end. And in my mind, because the licensee is going to submit an affidavit and the affidavit would be signed under penalty of perjury, et cetera. I mean, the onus of making a truthful statement is on the licensee. Whereas if we say something that the staff shall review, then the burden of making sure that the statement is truthful is on the staff, and they have to check everything, you know, in the licensee's file, and it's just going to be a huge administrative burden on the staff. So my thought is to, because it's an affidavit and that takes care of it, my thought is that we don't really need any staff shall review sort of a language, but I'm open to suggestions as well.
No, and I agree with Mr. Dinar. I think, Deb, what you're thinking is the affidavit might be burdensome for the staff. My thought is they submit the affidavit, the staff has it. Should there be an issue, they can look back to see did they comply with the requirements set forth in the affidavit. The one thing I can tell you now that I can see it better, what I wanted to do after cardiopulmonary resuscitation is do a comma and say including with an automated external defibrillator. As we know, I mean, they may have to do CPR without an AED, and we wouldn't want that to be, you know, we want them to have training on all forms of CPR, not just one with an AED.
Good point. Yeah, I like that change. And yeah, I could, I'm okay with the striking B. And it's true, if there's already a kind of a legally binding document that holds the applicant to that standard, then or holds the licensee to that standard, then I think that's appropriate. Is this something though that, I mean, it puts the entire burden of this on the dental therapist? And yet in statute, there's kind of a dual burden of for dentists as well to be involved in this process. So I am wondering a little bit about that. You know, there's like in statute, it says the dental therapist shall do this, and the dentist involved in that written practice, the practice agreement shall do basically the same thing. So it seems like they need to be doing that together. So I know this is an article pertaining exclusively or specifically to dental therapists, but does it warrant then replicating some of this under, I think it's Article 5, that talks and addresses some of the obligations that the dentist has for affiliated practice, and maybe we need to then replicate some of these obligations in that rule as well, much like we did for affiliated practice. Just kind of throwing it out there as to what you guys all think.
So this is Dinah. My initial thought on that, Ms. Kappas, is so the written practice collaborative agreement is something that the therapist needs to have a valid license, right? But the dentist doesn't need the practice agreement to have a valid license. So it's not a licensure requirement for the dentist. So, I mean, I'm fine with the therapist having the burden, for lack of a better word, to submit the affidavit, and the dentist doesn't have to, you know, do anything other than, you know, sign off on the practice agreement and obviously comply with the statutes. I mean, I don't think we need to replicate the language for dentists who are also signatories to this agreement.
Right. Yeah. And I appreciate the point, Deb. Under the first one, I think that's the only one that really a dentist would be able to speak to, and to Mr. Dinar's point,
the therapist
is the one that's going to submit. The other two, that's only within the scope of knowledge that a dental therapist would have. So that's why they would submit it. A dentist probably would just have to ask the therapist, and then based on what the therapist tells him or her, then submit the affidavit. So I think keeping this unilateral makes the most sense.
Okay. Yeah, I can go along with it. I understand the logic of that, and I know that the collaborative practice agreement has to also be signed by the dentist, so we can make an assumption that the dentist has reviewed that document to the extent and know that it contains all that it needs to be contained by virtue of the dentist's signature on the collaborative practice agreement. I can go with that.
So I have some minor thoughts on the suggested language in the margin. One of them is stylistic, you know, the BLS, CPR, and AED, do we need periods? I think in the whole rule package, we just don't have periods everywhere else. So might want to just do like a cleanup sort of a thing, either have periods or don't have periods, just make it consistent. And the other thought I had was with the words, so including comes in twice in subsection 2, and so is the thought there that BLS is sort of this umbrella term, and we are kind of more specifically saying, well, basic life support including CPR, and then CPR is like a less wide term which includes AED. So in other words, could we just say that the dental therapist is and will be continuously certified in basic life support BLS, comma, cardiopulmonary resuscitation, CPR, comma, and automated external defibrillator, AED, period. Does that, I mean, essentially what we're trying to do is get certificates in these three things. Or is it like something that I'm missing where BLS is this broader term which includes CPR, and CPR is this broad term which includes AED-based resuscitation? I just don't.
Yeah, it gets a little bit sticky sometimes when if you just ask somebody to go get CPR certified, there are so many levels that contain so many different things that we do. I think it is important to be as specific as we can as to what level of training is required. So it is hard to come up with something that's nice and clean to account for some of the terminology that people are familiar with. And I took where did I take this kind of setup? I can't even remember now. But I did take it from, I think I took it right from the provider where they say this is what it is, but I can't be sure. So,
Deb, unless there's someone that has a cardiology background on the phone, I'll refer to you on this one. For sure.
Yeah, and it just has to do with what kind of types of courses there are out there. And I think most of us who are licensees realize there's a lot of different levels of courses out there. But I'm willing to take guidance from anybody else too that has more experience than I do with it. I just know when I'm looking for the course, this is what I'm looking for. Okay, is it a healthcare provider level? Does it include the AED? Is it appropriate? And they'll usually in course descriptions, this is appropriate for healthcare providers who need CPR. So.
Yeah, but I just wanted to sort of, make sure that it's a clarifying language rather than a confusing language.
Right. I think it is clarifying, so.
Yeah, I think BLS usually is fine, but, clarifying it, I don't see any harm there.
So right now, thank you, Ryan. So it reads basic life support, including healthcare provider CPR and automated external defibrillator. It's missing sort of something like AED training.
And training in, including healthcare providers, CPR, and training in. Yeah, that would make it even more clear.
Yes, I would be fine with the language right now as it appears.
And so now stylistically going back, since we've eliminated a B, we don't need to have an A. So it becomes more that the lead-in sentence to this is kind of a standalone sentence. A dental therapist shall submit a signed affidavit. And then affirming that, and then we'd have an A, B, and C, wouldn't we? Wouldn't that be the
sounds
right
good.
Style?
So this is Jessica. Are you?
Hey, Jessica.
Hello. So are we suggesting taking this language here that's in the comment and replacing just this subsection B? Or replacing
A, B, and C.
A, B, and C. Okay.
Oh, so I guess it would just all still be under A.
Right.
Well, yeah, so we'd have a new A, and then, I kind of had to go back to the original thing here to see what the layout was. Yeah, so it still would be an A, and we just would have a new B, C, and D, and et cetera, so. So that language replaces A, B, and C.
Okay, and so stylistically speaking, I would recommend not using parentheses and the acronyms for CPR and AED or BLS. You typically only want to use the acronym if you've defined it somewhere. So I know throughout the rules we've used CPR before. And so I'm thinking maybe we just add CPR as a definition to the definition section. BLS, it doesn't look like anywhere else in this rule, at least for that we're working on today, uses the acronym BLS. So I don't think it's necessary to put that into parentheses unless you want to further define it. And likewise with the automated external defibrillator.
So thank you, Jessica, for those suggestions. In my mind, I think it's much more of a hassle if we define CPR because we are just going off of whatever the experts are sort of think of CPR, and CPR sort of in my mind at least has evolved a little bit over the years. So if we say something like, oh, CPR means cardiopulmonary resuscitation, that, yeah, it's a definition, but do we really need it? I mean, we could, for example, say in the section itself, I mean, the way we say basic life support, we just say including healthcare provider cardiopulmonary resuscitation and just leave it at that without having to define it, because it's a term that will be or has been adequately defined by the medical professions elsewhere. And everyone sort of knows what CPR is, but once we start to define what it is, I can't think of how we would define it.
And I think the reason we would do it is just CPR. Some people may not know what the acronym stands for both of those. So if I'm not mistaken, didn't we have augmented external defibrillator initially, so like automated. Again, you know, you're all smarter than me, so you know maybe what that stuff stands for, but I don't. So there you have it.
And Dr. Taylor raised his hand as well.
Yes, this is Dr. Taylor. Can we just, instead of using CPR, just say cardiopulmonary resuscitation and automated the AED one? Just spell it out instead of using the acronym and then be done with it. Make it simple.
Makes sense to me, Dr. Taylor.
I agree with you, Mr. Dinar. Appreciate you.
Would you guys like to do that throughout the rules where you have also used CPR? Change the acronym to cardiopulmonary resuscitation?
I think so. I would. If we're gonna, you know, cross our T's and dot our I's, we might as well just do that.
And whatever we decide, I want it to be consistent for sure throughout the rules.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, which I'm fine with that too, Dr. Taylor. Mm-hmm. Okay, any other changes, questions, even from Jessica? Welcome, by the way, Jessica. Thank you.
Thank you. Sorry for my tardiness.
That's okay.
Fine. You missed out. It's been a thrill ride before you got on.
Yeah, exactly.
Welcome to the party.
That's right. I know, rules are exciting stuff.
You may be the only person that I'd actually believe those words coming out of your mouth.
Right.
Okay, so moving on, and again, for Deb and Sean, I know that you two had spoken before and had more of the changes, so I'm going to kind of let you guys continue as we keep scrolling down.
Yeah. Do we want to vote on this change first before we continue? I can't remember how we did this. Or do we want to just wait till we get 1609 completed?
I was about to say let's vote on the subsection A and then move on. But again, I'm fine with either option.
I am as well. And I was going to say, why don't we vote on the whole subsection? The whole 1609. Is that what you were saying, Mr. Dinar? I apologize.
No, I was saying I'm fine with the option that you suggested, Ms. Hardy, but I am also fine with just voting for A because we essentially took off A, B, and C and made it A. So then it's easier maybe for minutes purposes to then just vote on A and then go to D, which will be B, and so forth.
Okay, that sounds good. Let's do that. So do we have a motion?
So I make a motion that we approve the new language for subsection A, which includes subsection A1, A2, and A3 as written. And the motion includes that we change the acronym for cardiopulmonary resuscitation throughout the rules that we are authorized to amend. And we change the acronym for automated external defibrillator throughout the rules that we are authorized to amend.
Dr. Taylor seconds. Thank you, Mr. Dinar.
We have a motion and second. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Okay, now Deb.
Okay. So our new B would be, we have a strike what's there. Well, actually, let's see. We could just change. Maybe we could do some changing. So it would read each dentist in a collaborative practice agreement. Excuse me. Each dentist in a collaborative practice relationship. Shall be available telephonically or electronically during the business hours of the dental therapist to provide an appropriate level of contact, communication, and consultation. And we prefer that to option two, yeah. Although personally, I could still go either way. But I think Sean had a preference for one, so.
I'm fine with the way you have it, Deb, right on the screen, so. Mm-hmm.
This sounds good to me. I have no comments or suggestions on this section.
Perfect. Anybody like to make a motion?
So, before a motion, just a thought. I'm trying to be the sort of trying to see how the language can be confusing or clarifying. So we have defined what a collaborative practice agreement is, but we don't have a definition for relationship. So just a thought. I mean, I'm fine with relationship. By no means I'm disagreeing with it, but maybe a better way of saying it is each dentist who is a signatory of a collaborative practice agreement. So that just makes it clear that, okay, you have signed a collaborative practice agreement with the dental therapist, and if you have done so, then be available telephonically or electronically during business hours. And the other sort of comment is, this is in the dental therapy portion of the rules. So for the dentists, I don't know if that would be confusing because they would be, if they are looking at just the dentist section and they don't see this and it's in the dental therapy rules, so making it easy for the professionals to figure out what they are supposed to do. We need to think about where it appears in the rules.
Yeah, again, this kind of harkens back to the duality of the obligations. You know, they both the dental therapist and the dentist have certain obligations to do this. So the dental therapist has an obligation to maintain appropriate contact, and so does the dentist. And so what we're doing here is just kind of elaborating on the methods for that are would be considered acceptable and meet the standard for appropriate communication, to include telephone and other electronic means. But it does sort of speak to that same issue of, you know, if you have an obligation that the dentist needs to fulfill, it really should show up in the dentist section, and whatever obligation the dental therapist has would show up here. So I agree.
So if you want, I can plan to move this section into where it looks like it would fit best for the dentist, as opposed to keeping it here in dental therapy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, I could frankly go either ways because mm-hmm. I just want to flag the question for discussion in this group mm-hmm. because, I mean, there are pros and cons, right? A dental therapist looking at, okay, what do I need to do for the collaborative practice agreement needs to look at the dentist section as well as this section if we move it. And on the other side of the coin is the thought that a dentist who needs to figure out what to do with the collaborative practice agreement, where are they going to look? So that's sort of where I'm coming from is, you know, whatever we do, it's fine. I mean, it's somewhere in the rules, right? I mean, you maybe like do a search, control F, and you'll find it eventually. But are we making it easier or harder for the professionals to follow the rules? And, you know, it's that kind of thing.
Yeah, it just seems to me that as the two practitioners are working out their collaborative practice agreement, which should be a collaborative effort to do, that they would that coming from both sides, they would get a complete picture of what's required, and then, you know, move forward accordingly. So.
So then, do we improve the language and then come back to where it's actually going to be placed?
This is Jessica. That's what I would suggest. If you're happy with this language, but you're just not sure whether it's best placed here or in the dental rules, then what you can do is you can approve this language. And then if you want, I can, for our next meeting, I can look at where it might be best placed. I off the top of my head, I'm not sure if we're already amending one of the dental rules that, you know, it'd be easy to slip this in there, or if we would be opening up a whole new rule, in which case you may just want to leave it where it is.
Okay, you know what? The more I'm thinking of this, let's just leave it here. It's not going to be perfect, but at least, I mean, we don't have to have another meeting. We had like this stuff.
Yeah. And Dr. Taylor raised his hand also.
I agree 100%. So, yes, let's leave it there. And if the legislature wants to think with it, they can. All right. Said my say. Thank you, Mr. Dinar and Deb and Sean. Appreciate you.
I think it'll work out.
So the current language states, each dentist who enters into a collaborative practice agreement shall be available telephonically or electronically during the business hours of the dental therapist to provide an appropriate level of contact, communication, and consultation.
Sounds good. This is Dr. Taylor. We want to have a vote on that?
Yeah, if that's a motion, Dr. Taylor, I second it.
It's a motion.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Motion carried.
Okay, let's see. We did have a suggestion for this next one. So the new C, we have, our suggestion was, in addition to the requirements of ARS 32-1276.04 and 32-1276.05, a written collaborative practice agreement shall include a provision for a substitute dentist to cover an extenuating circumstance that renders the collaborative practice dentist unavailable for contact, communication, or consultation with the dental therapist.
There was an additional stakeholder suggestion that the agreement should also include procedures and protocols relevant to the administration and dispensing of prescription-only, oral and topical, non-narcotic, analgesics, anti-inflammatory, and antibiotic medications.
Right, and actually we have two other rules to consider. I mean, I'm thinking that would be D. So can we just deal with C first and then talk about D and even a possible E? Well, actually, I'm going to withdraw the stakeholder suggestion for procedures and protocols. That's actually redundant because that's already in statute. That doesn't show up in my notes any longer as a suggestion. So this was an ever evolving kind of thing. So, but I do have two other, rules that we had sent forward in the, kind of table format, the work that Sean and I did together. There were two other, rules to consider. You want to put those in there now, Jessica? Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. So D would be then, to comply with ARS 3276.04B.
Say that number again, Deb.
3271276.04B. A written collaborative practice agreement must include a signed endorsement form documenting the required 1,000 dental therapy clinical practice hours under direct supervision of a dentist licensed in this state.
Deb, do you have access to the chat?
Yes, I do.
You want to cut and paste that into the chat?
Okay.
Hey Deb, quick question. Yeah. And I know we agreed to this, and I'm fine. I'm just wondering, would this be better to include up above in the affidavit?
I think you were thinking exactly what I was thinking as I was reading it. I go, hey, maybe this should be item D under or item 4 under A. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let me find my document here real quick so I can paste it.
I like the language. I just think we include that up with the affidavit.
Yeah, it might make more sense because it then would just be part of the affidavit. If that is satisfactory to, because the affidavit isn't signed by the dentist, is that going to be enough for the board to consider? Do you know what I mean? Because it's saying it's attesting to something that the dentist did without the dentist actually seeing the affidavit.
Well, okay.
And I'm just kind of making sure we got everything covered to people's satisfaction. So
hold on, let me read. I need to read that section. Give me one second.
Of course, now I can't find this. So let's see. It would have been at the last one, which would have been this one.
So the legislation doesn't indicate. I guess you're right. We should include it here because we need to say if it's signed by the dentist. You're right. The affidavit is going to be signed by the dental therapist. So leave it where it is.
Okay.
So much for us getting excited.
I know. I thought, oh, boy, that sounds like a pretty good way to.
To the extent we think this is a Rubik's Cube, it is not. So.
Yeah. All right. Let me find the language here real quick. And the other one's going to be, make sure we get them all in there.
So this is Dayanar. Thank you, Ms. Kappas, for copy-pasting the proposed language. Excuse me. On the first copy-paste, I just my wave top thoughts as I'm thinking about this. Why don't we just say, start with a written collaborative practice agreement shall include .. Because if we say in addition to the requirements of these two sections, it looks like we're going beyond the statutes. I would just leave it out, the first kind of like before the comma, and I would just start with a written collaborative practice agreement shall include a provision for a substitute dentist to cover an extenuating circumstance that renders the collaborative practice dentist unavailable for contact, communication, or consultation with the dental therapist, period. Just is like cleaner and like doesn't raise like.
Sure. Types. Yeah.
So, hold on. I'm fine with that, Mr. Dayanar. If we go back to D, I think we should specify signed endorsement form. I think we should specify that the supervising dentist is the one that signs the endorsement, if that makes sense. Must include a signed endorsement form from the supervising dentist documenting the required. And Dennis, I assume it doesn't have to, can it be from different dentists, Deb? Was that the intent, that it doesn't have to be from the same supervising dentist? So maybe after Dennis, we do a parentheses and an S and a close parentheses so they know that it can be more than one.
Yeah, and it could, and it very well could.
Yeah.
If you think of a community health center,
yep.
That dental therapist may be working with several different dentists. Yeah.
So it's still a supervising dentist, though, right?
Yes.
Yes. But,
so I'm just saying at the end of Dennis put open parentheses S, close parentheses to show it could be more than one.
You actually don't need to do that because the general interpretation for rule language is that the singular means plural and plural is singular. So as long as you have it as supervising dentist, it could mean one or more supervising dentists.
Okay.
And have we defined supervising dentist or is this different?
Actually, I think direct supervision is defined.
Yeah.
I don't think supervising dentist.
So then let's say get rid of supervise and say from the dentist providing direct supervision. And then comma, documenting required that, yeah.
That somehow seems redundant, but.
So I guess my question here is this 1,000 hours of dental therapy clinical practice, is that necessarily under direct supervision?
It must be under direct supervision.
Okay,
yeah, that's the point of the documenting this. So before they can enter into, before a dental therapist and a dentist can enter into a collaborative practice agreement, there must be documented evidence of having first practiced 1,000 hours under direct supervision. So that's why it makes sense to me that if they're putting together their collaborative practice agreement, this endorsement form is there so that it's coupled together. Yes, dental therapist had the appropriate number of hours as stipulated by the dentist, and here's the collaborative practice agreement subsequent to those hours.
And is this requirement, this 1,000 hours of dental therapy clinical practice, is that listed somewhere in another rule or statute?
It's in statute. It's in 1276.04b.
Got it. Okay. And does that statute specify that it has to be under the direct supervision of a dentist who's licensed in Arizona?
Yes, it does.
Okay. So then I would suggest taking off the last portion of that sentence and just saying that it's a signed endorsement from the dentist providing direct supervision documenting the dental therapist's completion of 1,000 hours of dental therapy clinical practice.
Let's see. Ah, okay. I see. I see where you're going.
So you're saying, Jessica, because it's set forth in the statute, that's why you just have according to 32-1276.04B.
Yep.
Okay.
And then I don't know, when it says form here, is that something that the board's going to provide? Or is it basically just a statement from the supervising dentist that says, yes, they've completed, you know, 1,000 hours?
I kind of look at those kinds of things have typically been provided by the agency. So like, for example, when dental assistants have to provide Danby with documentation of their clinical experiences, it's a form that's provided by them. And the same way with some of the forms that affiliated practice dental hygienists submit. They are forms that have been created and provided by the board. So I was just following those examples rather than having it be a free form endorsement that, you know, but.
Can I come in here real quick? Oh, sorry, Mr. Dinah.
No, go ahead, Mr. Agnesson.
So I was looking at ARS 32-1276.04B. I inserted the language, which is the second half of B, in the chat. And it basically says, at the end of that, it says, and shall provide documentation satisfactory to the board of having completed this requirement.
Mm-hmm.
I think in just to be consistent with other board forms, it says it'll say an approved form by the board or something like that, as opposed to just form. I don't know that the board or its staff needs to create a form, much like we don't create transcripts for schools. So it would just be documentation that's satisfactory to the board of having completed the 1,000 hours.
But I think the purpose of this, Ryan, was to identify what kind of documentation would be appropriate to the board. So we need to say something. If it's not in, yeah, so Jessica's going a signed and dated statement, you know, whatever. What is that? What is, you know, what's going to satisfy the board? I don't think we can leave licensees guessing as to what kind of documentation is going to be satisfactory.
So this is Dinar. Mr. Edmondson, you beat me to the punch. I was essentially going to say what you said, but in my mind, I don't think we need the term form in there, because a dentist who is endorsing and saying someone completed 1,000 hours, I mean, if I were the dentist, I would put that on my letterhead, and I would say, you know, Mr. John Smith, license number, blah, 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 spent 1,000 hours, and I'm endorsing it, signed Mr. Dinar, right?
Mm-hmm.
That should be sufficient, and the statute says that's documentation satisfactory because it's identifying both the dentist and the dental therapist, and that is enough, right? I mean, we don't need a form or have to even think of that. So I think the way it's written, I think it gives satisfactory or sufficient details to the dentist and the dental therapist as to what needs to be included in the endorsement.
I'm good with that approach, but maybe we can then change a little the language later rather than saying it's documenting, because at that point, if you're doing a signed and dated statement, you're verifying that the dental therapist completed the 1,000 hours, right? Rather than documenting. Documenting to me seems like it should be you know, that they were, that they did it from this time frame to this time frame on these, in this particular way, et cetera. So maybe
yeah,
we need
documenting, documenting in my mind is like time cards, time entries.
Right. So maybe we just want verifying that the dental therapist completed those hours.
So would the board be happy with a signed and dated statement from the dentist saying that the dental therapist has completed those hours?
I'll let the board members speak and the staff.
So since I don't think any board member jumped in, do we have – oh, Addie Diner, did you want to jump in on that?
Yes, I think – I mean, I, as I said, I'm fine with the word verifying. So right now, subsection D, I'm just going to read it aloud. A collaborative practice agreement shall include a signed and dated statement from the dentist providing dental, providing direct supervision, verifying the dental therapist's completion of 1,000 hours of dental therapy clinical practice according to ARS 32-1226-104B. I think that is satisfactory to me. I mean,
and maybe we don't even need, let's see. Yeah, okay. Yeah, that still works. That still works.
And I mean, I understand. So the statute is saying provide documentation satisfactory to the board. And just my thought, I'm satisfied with this kind of a signed and dated statement.
Right.
But, right. And I mean, at any point, if there is ever any issue that, oh, someone did not actually complete 1,000 hours, then the board can always ask for more information and the time entries and all of that. But that's only if maybe an issue comes up in the future where, you know, there's some misrepresentation happening in the signed and dated statement.
Mm-hmm.
So from staff's perspective, I don't have an issue with any of the words, and I think they're all kind of subjective to the reader a bit, because they're almost synonymous, whether it's documenting, verifying, authenticating, supporting, they're all synonymous. So but I'm okay with the way it reads right here.
It makes sense to me as someone who was going to be putting that together. That's where I would go. I would say, okay, then my statement needs to say I'm verifying those hours have been completed, and I don't have to go in much further. So if I were a dentist. Works for me.
All right, then I guess a motion needs to be made. I make a motion to approve subsections C and D as discussed and as they appear on the screen.
So, Dr. Taylor, I second that as amended.
We have a motion and second. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 I did lie, though. I actually have an additional rule. I didn't lie. I just forgot that we have actually another one, and here it is.
Hold on. Before you go, any opposed?
Oh.
Motion carries. Okay, there you go. Now go ahead.
All right, great. So another rule, and this was actually came from a previous discussion about needing to clarify this fact that each written collaborative practice agreement shall be between one dentist and one dental therapist. I think we had a discussion as to whether or not the way the statute's written, it could be one dentist could have one collaborative practice agreement, but it could involve any number of dental therapists. And that was when we were talking about the how many, you know, that the statute says that a dentist can only enter into four collaborative practice agreements. But if a singular practice agreement can involve more than one dental therapist, then, you know, perhaps that creates an issue. So just this is kind of a clarification to statute that it's a one-on-one relationship in that agreement.
this is Diana. I mean, yeah, thank you for thinking about that. It tried to skip my mind. But now that I'm thinking of it, does it cause any tension with the subsection C, which provides for a substitute dentist? So would that need substitute dentist, in other words, have to sign the collaborative practice agreement?
I don't see it that way, because if it's just if that allowance is made in the agreement, then you know it, we may not know who that substitute dentist may be down the road. So like in a, and I'm thinking of a, you know, if it were in a collaborative practice agreement or a community health center, the agreement may be with one of the dentists in the community health center, but at any given time, maybe it could be any number of the other dentists employed in the health center, and that could be a coming and going situation. You know, there could be these three dentists there for 6 months, and then boom, one of them leaves, and then there's a new one on there. And I don't think you want to be trying to amend agreements accordingly. I think that's what, you know, the main dentist entering into the agreement has that responsibility to make sure that an appropriate substitute dentist is provided.
So in other words, if I'm the dentist signing this, I'm saying essentially, yeah, I'll be available if you need me, but for whatever reason, if I'm not available, I'll make sure someone is available for you.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And make sure that that's known to the dental therapist and that the substitute dentist has agreed to that, you know, and all those kinds of things. And aware of what's going on.
So I have a question. Because in D, you had mentioned that there may be more than one supervising dentist. So,
but that's before someone is eligible to enter into a collaborative practice agreement.
Okay.
Yeah.
And there's not going to be a situation where you have, you know, two dentists who share a practice and they want to have a collaborative practice agreement with a dental therapist. They would each then have to have their own collaborative agreement with that dental therapist.
Correct. That would be correct. Yeah.
Okay.
So I'm fine with this language. I would just delete the word only. I would just keep it, a collaborative practice agreement shall be between one dentist and one dental therapist. So I guess I'm seeing nodding heads, so I make a motion we accept subsection E as written.
Taylor seconds.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries.
Okay, now for 1610, and I think the statement there pretty much holds true. We know that statute says that protocols for this need to be included in a collaborative practice agreement. So the thinking initially was maybe we need some guidance to what in rule as to what those protocols should or might look like. But then in retrospect, thinking about that, that may just not be appropriate for rule. I think this begs for some discussion, and I would definitely like to hear from the other licensees on this as to what they're kind of thinking about it. So how is this getting too much in the weeds, getting too prescriptive? Is this something that could just be more of a resource? Could that resource be provided by the board, or could it just come from the professional associations? You know, what do you even think about the contents? So there's a lot here, and it just may be too prescriptive for the rule, and maybe not necessary.
My only comment would be, I think it's kind of like what we discussed with the anesthesia section. We should have some parameters here. So if it's, again, governed by a collaborative practice agreement, I get where you're going, and that can be set forth. But then the supervising dentist in the collaborative practice agreement, what do they look to? I totally appreciate we don't want to get too prescriptive for the, you know, section dealing with prescription-only drugs. But at the same point, can we set out some parameters that at least let them know here's kind of the stop point?
Right. And I had that same kind of thought that maybe this is like, this is overkill. Maybe it can be pared down into something a little bit more, that just gives that framework rather than the detail. Is that what kind of you're thinking too, Sean, that might be acceptable?
I would find that acceptable. I mean, again, the problem is though, I look at this language and when I want to start trimming it, I don't know where we trim it. And that's me not being on the clinical side. You know, what can we take out? What can we keep that would provide that guidance? Not be overkill, but at the same point, if we take something out, like the prescription order, you know, it's not like we can remove one of those and leave the others in. That just probably get more confusing, you know?
Yeah, I know.
So I leave it to the licensee.
That's the problem I had when I was writing it, Sean. Because I was really trying to make it, you know, kind of a trim, but it got more and more difficult. So,
well, and to that point, Deb, would it make sense? If we leave it in, let's be honest, the whole point of a collaborative practice agreement isn't so a dental therapist can do a bunch of administering and dispensing of drugs. It's so they can provide dental services, some of which will implicate prescribing. Or not prescribing, but administering and dispensing. But, you know, that's not the main service they're providing. And a lot of them probably won't be providing that.
Correct.
So would it make sense rather than, I know everyone loves the length of these meetings, but to leave it in as is, and we can always come back if we say, wow, that's too much, rather than try to kind of foresee what may end up happening, because we haven't seen this play out yet.
I hear both sides of it, but I agree. I don't know where you would cut things. What do you decide leaves and what stays? So I tend to sway in agreement with Sean. Oh, sorry, Dr. Taylor, raising your hand.
Yeah, so make it short and simple. Let's vote on this and then see where we go.
Okay, so I agree, but I just don't know what the issues are that we're tackling with this language. I mean, at one point I heard it said, and in my mind it was that we are encouraging people to spell out how they are going to deal with administering or dispensing prescription-only drugs in these agreements. But then I also heard that the way the language is written, it's, you know, there's like shall language in there. Shall ensure that, you know, subsection 1, A, B, C, D, F, right? So I guess if the thought is to encourage the dentist and the dental therapist to spell out these things versus require them to spell out these things, I guess I'm not understanding.
Ryan, can you zoom in on it again, or is that just me and user error? Because I'm just seeing it as one of the little tiles. It's not the full document or taking up the majority of the screen. Does everyone else still have it in majority of their screen as the document, or is it one of the 9 tiles?
Mine is the majority of my screen.
Okay.
Yeah, mine too.
All right, user error on my part then. Hold on. So my thought, Mr. Dinar, to answer that question, so if we just race through this, the first one says, you know, you're going to lay out in a collaborative practice agreement to summarize it real high level. A1 then goes, here's what a prescription order must entail. I think we would want to keep all of that so then the dentist knows exactly what's being prescribed.
Mm-hmm.
2 is, here's what you can dispense and administer based on the patient you're dealing with. 3 is, the patient gets information from the dental therapist about what is getting administered or prescribed. Four then is the package labeling, and five is what's entered in the record. Six then is where you store it. So I go back to, the stuff that is mandatory as set forth in this section to me makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, I think it could even be more, and I'm fine not including more, but like if you take out where drugs should be kept in a secure area, you know, maybe that's overkill, but at the same time, if it's not in there, would you have a licensed dentist in the collaborative practice say, you know, keep it somewhere that's not secure, then that becomes an issue for patient health and safety, and it's easily avoided. And I don't think anyone's going to say, wow, they're asking a lot by me to keep it in a secure area, and it spells out what that area involves. Deb, you wrote this section, though, right?
I did. I wrote it. I took it as I looked at what was already in rule for dentists. That went a little bit further, of course, because they were prescribing. So obviously
right.
There's more rules and more obligations associated with the actual prescribing. This is administering and dispensing. So I tried to look at, well, what's appropriate for administering and dispensing? And then I also looked at the pharmacy, the Board of Pharmacy rules and some of those things for pharmacists who administer and dispense. So I looked at that as well and kind of tried to blend the two in language that made sense for us. So,
well, and again, I mean, many times, Deb, some of your edits and narrative, I do have some revisions for this one. I think it's appropriate. So,
yeah, and to Mr. Dinar's point, if we look at 32.1276.04 and it talks E and it says a written collaborative practice agreement between a dentist and a dental therapist shall do all of the following. And number four is establish protocols for quality assurance, administering and dispensing medications, administering and dispensing medications and supervising dental assistants. So, The protocol for administering and dispensing those meds is a requirement for the written agreement. So it is a shall. And
right.
So, yeah.
And if I may, Samini, thank you for that clarification from both of you.
Yeah.
And in my mind, it looks like this whole section is just normal procedures that dentists follow anyways, right? So in my mind, when I'm looking at 0.04, subsection E, when it says establish protocols for quality assurance, so if I'm a dentist, I'm thinking, well, can I, so if I'm a dentist and I have a dental practice, I probably have these protocols in place already for my practice. Can I, as a dentist, then say, hey, I want to enter into an agreement with a dental therapist, and here's the protocols that I follow in my office.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't you follow the same thing?
Well, but the issue there is it's first off, as we know, under direct supervision, the therapist can be in a different office. It might not be the dentist's office. I mean, theoretically, after the 1,000 hours of direct supervision, unless there's a reason for the dentist to show up in person, I mean, Deb, it's right. They can never be in person with that dental therapist again, right? I mean, not that that's a guarantee, but it could happen. But I think it goes to Deb's point. That dentist is prescribing. The therapist is administering and dispensing, not prescribing. That's why I think there might be confusion, like, hold on, they're taking a different function on rather than the prescription function. So, you know, we wouldn't want them in the collaborative practice agreement recognizing there's a different function being taken on, thinking that, okay, well, you know, if it's left to me, maybe some of these things that I am doing when prescribing don't need to be done when administering or dispensing. That's why I give Deb a lot of credit. I think she did a nice job of looking at the, you know, understanding that difference and then looking at both the pharmacy as well as what the dentists have and recognizing it's a non-prescription function and coming up with this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That's my thought.
And I think, I mean, I agree. I mean, like, as you guys started saying, I mean, what do we cut from this? I mean, the protocol makes sense. And I mean, I'm assuming each dental practice has, you know, their own protocols, if not exactly like this, then very close to something like this.
Mm-hmm.
And my concern is if we put sort of this, you know, these are all the things you must have in a protocol. It sort of creates a completely new system of protocols, and then now that's defined in the rules, whereas dentists, I would imagine, are in a better position to come up with protocols and see what works and does not work. I mean, we can, on the one hand, we can maybe establish minimum standards. We can say, at a minimum, your protocol should include this. But it seems like, I mean, if we say, you know, shall include these things, we are sort of restricting the protocols to only these things. And I just want to know if in the future, if for whatever reason, there is good reason for the dentist to change the protocols. Is there obviously make it safer for patients, et cetera. Is there any room that we're leaving in the rules for that to happen?
This is Dr. Taylor. I say we leave it the way it is and vote on it, guys. Come on.
Is that a motion, Dr. Taylor?
That's a motion.
I'll second it.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion?
We do have a question there from Jessica. Is this really referring to prescription-only drug, which is defined? And I think the answer is yes, prescription-only drugs in those categories, oral and topical, non-narcotic, analgesics, anti-inflammatories, and antibiotics. So it's a subset of that larger definition because of what rule says. So.
And my only other discussion item is, sorry, did I speak over someone else? Sorry.
No, I was just saying I misspoke and say because of what rule says, and I was meaning what statute says. So statute has a very a limited subset of what prescription-only drugs a dental therapist can administer and dispense.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. So my only other discussion item is actually a question for staff. So I know the anesthesia committee is looking at some of these things, so I just want to make sure if we approve this change, it's not going to gum up the works for them.
Yeah, we're not even in this at all. It's completely dedicated to 1601, 2, 3, 4, and maybe a little bit of 5.
Okay.
And this is brand new.
This is Dr. Taylor. That's a whole different thing, Mr. Dinar. That's something.
Jessica also sits in that. Go ahead, Jessica. Okay. Jessica Thomas, were you going to say something else?
No, I'm just trying to wrap my head around the prescription only, since it is defined, but then we're talking about only the oral and topical non-narcotic analgesics, anti-inflammatory, and antibiotic. Because I think drugs itself is also defined, if I'm not mistaken.
While we look that up, I had a quick question, and maybe this goes along more with Mr. Dinar's point. And if we're still in discussion, I get that I'm not a voting member, so I'm not even sure if I'm allowed to discuss. Scott, you can cut me off if I can't. But this 1610, it looks like it's a long effort, and it looks like a great effort. But I kind of go back to 1276.04E. And the statutory requirement is a written collaborative practice agreement between a dentist and dental therapist shall do all of the following. And then if E4 says establish protocols for quality assurance, administering and dispensing medication, and supervising dental assistants. If we then go further into a rule and add in R411-1610, now we're saying what that administrating and dispensing medication protocols and quality assurance should look like. And if they deviate from that even greater or less, now we're saying it has to follow this exactly. Whereas I think if we just leave it to E4 for the dentist to establish protocols, I don't know, maybe I'm too naive to believe that the protocols, I put we also limit ourselves to now what's in 1610 also. So I don't know.
I think Mr. Edmondson, you articulated it better than I could. I mean, my thinking is in the future, let's say there is a case, a complaint in front of the board saying there weren't proper protocols that the dentist established under E4, then the board gets to decide under the normal standard of care what those protocols that were established by the dentist are appropriate or not. So, I'm still leaning toward not having it in the rules because, I mean, again, this is a very good effort. And, you know, if the associations want to suggest this to the dentist, by all means do so, you know, the dental association, therapist association, what have you. But the moment we put in the rules, we sort of put a straitjacket on it. And it seems like E4 is giving the dentists and the dental therapist to come up with and establish those protocols for themselves, what works for them. And yeah, this could be a very good model for them if the associations want, you know, to see that happen. But I'm still leaning toward not putting it in the rules for those reasons.
And to that point, I ask Ryan, I know for dental hygienist affiliated practice, the board does have some templates or models of agreements and et cetera, et cetera. Is this something that the board would like to do for dental therapists? You know, create some models or templates. Templates might not be the right word, but at least some examples is a better word. Like this could be put in a section on dental, the written collaborative practice agreements for dental therapists. Here's some examples that you might use. And that something like this might be an example.
Yeah. So truthfully speaking, I don't want to do anything else, but.
I hear you. Well, see, that's where you can lean on the professional associations because the Dental Hygienist Association is more than willing to help you with the affiliated practice agreement stuff. So.
Yeah, I'm fully interested in posting anything on the website to help people in their profession, but I think that it, kind of along the lines of Mr. Dino's point, as soon as we state in rule, it becomes a straitjacket as opposed to an example.
Right, right.
And so I appreciate the effort on 1610. I don't know. I'm more of a minimalist in this. I think we should stick just to the statute in E4, but I don't want to discredit exactly everything you did because it's a lot of work and it looks like you did going through the board's statutes and rules plus pharmacy to create this lovely document or part of a document is, it sounds almost disparaging, but I'm not trying to be that way.
Oh no.
I applaud the
no, I don't take it that way. Like I said, this was something that we thought was really important initially, but then in just further thought and further discussion with people, we came to see that, yeah, it probably is a bridge too far for rule and it just becomes a good example. So
let's vote.
Yeah, I'm fine voting.
Okay, so we have a motion on the table and let's do a roll call vote, please, Ryan.
Okay.
Does everybody know the motion? It's to accept it as written.
And to clarify, accepting what? Are we accepting A through, I guess it's A and B of 1610? And then
correct.
Okay. I'm sorry.
You know, but it's R4-11-1610 is written.
Yeah. Okay. Got it. Give me 1 second. All right. Hardy?
No.
I got to write these down, by the way, as I do this. Sorry. Dinar?
No.
Kappas?
No.
Murphy?
Yes.
Taylor?
Yes.
Motion fails. Hardy, Dinar, and Kappas opposed. Do we have a new motion on the table?
Sorry. So here's what I'll say. I'll discuss and then I'll make a motion. The problem we have right now, if you scroll up to the top, and I wanted to make this before the vote took place, but I didn't. The issue is this sets the floor. So I think a lot of people think that this dictates it. It's literally setting the floor. Deb, answer me this question. Who beyond dentists? Are dental hygienists able to administer and dispense prescription-only drugs?
No.
So it's only dentists. So we're now opening up another provider to be able to dispense drugs. Of course, we know with opioid issues that this is a big issue. It's, you don't want to just, you know, whatever, to each their own. Again, hopefully in dentistry, that wouldn't be something that is as grave as in the medical field. But if you read that, a dental therapist, I would assume, in their dental therapy CODA accredited school, Deb, how much training do they get when it comes to prescription-only drugs?
I think even dental hygienists get into a lot of this, just simply as a second pair of eyes looking at, you know, what's being given to the patient, you know, by the dentist. Sometimes the dentist expects the dental hygienist to kind of talk to the patient about the prescription that's been written, you know, so a lot of this even goes into play with for dental hygienists. So I'm assuming that it's going to be
in the education
for dental.
Yeah, so hopefully there's a little education, but I mean, it's not pharmacy school. From what I've seen as far as the curriculum, it doesn't seem like a lot of focus is put on this. Mm-hmm. So my thought is, if you read the language of what Deb put together, it says a dental therapist shall ensure. What does that do? It gives the dental therapist the protection that, again, if you have a dentist that views dispensing and administering prescription-only drugs different than prescribing and decides to do something that in essence shouldn't be done, this gives a dental therapist actual protection because they could say, look, I just know I need that whatever is in the collaborative practice agreement as the floor, this is what needs to be followed. And if I'm following this as the floor, and if they want to do something different and extra, that's fine as long as there's this floor. Now, if we just delete this section and there is no floor, I'm really concerned, given we're dealing with prescription-only drugs, just like when we were dealing with anesthesia, now there's no safety net in my mind. There's no direction. And again, there's nothing in the Dental Practice Act right now that differentiates here's what you do when you administer and dispense as compared to here's what you do when you prescribe. So that's the confusion I'm trying to get around. My motion would be to maybe reconsider the language, come back. I don't think we need to have a separate meeting. This could be taken up with the entire board to include something. Or my motion would be to reconsider the last motion and include the language of R4-11-1610.
Is that a motion?
I'm going to motion to reconsider the prior motion.
Taylor second.
By parliamentary procedure, someone who voted against it can't bring it up for reconsideration. But
we didn't vote against it.
They were both in favor of it.
Well, they voted in favor of it. That's right. But the motion failed. So, right? So it has to be on the prevailing side. So the prevailing side was a no. So someone from the prevailing side has to bring it back up.
I don't know if we've necessarily set forth.
Oh, I know. I just, procedure, I have so. To do that just because, so.
I appreciate it, Deb. We all know who we represent. So.
if the group wants to reconsider it, you know, I'm fine with that too. So.
Okay. I mean, my thoughts haven't changed, just for the record, because, you know, I think this is something that the associations are well equipped to, you know, send to the professionals. And I, you know, maybe think of that as, you know, being on the sunlight side of the mountain or being on the shady side of the mountain. I mean, I trust dentists who are licensed. A vast majority of them do a good job. They don't get into trouble with board issues. We don't see many complaints. So I would trust the dentist to have protocols in place and to impose or, you know, have the dental therapist follow those protocols. If once in a blue moon there happens to be a case regarding what protocols meet the standard of care, you know, the board can deal with it at that point. We don't have to put it in the rules. It's very hard to amend the rules. I don't know, for example, I'm not a practitioner, right? I don't know if these protocols are sufficient. I don't know if these protocols impose more restrictions than what is the industry standard, less restrictions than the industry standard. If they're a minimum floor, I would assume these are just less restrictive than the industry standards because they're minimum floor. A dentist cannot, I'm assuming, would go beyond these protocols. So, I mean, I just don't see why we need this in the rules. I mean, I understand all of your concerns. Hey, you know, we are trying to make it safe for people, for practitioners to have confidence and the customers to have confidence in the professionals. But ultimately, that's, you know, that's a legislative judgment that was left to the dentist and the dental therapist to come up with protocols as professionals, as experts in their respective fields. And I just don't see why we need it in the rules at all.
I agree, Mr. Dinar. And when I think of it, I think of also how it is standard of care on a similar but different thing that, for instance, somebody who had a valve replacement needs pre-med and that we need to document it in our notes, but that is not written into rule on how we document it. It's a standard of care. The association has given language into it on what you should include, but it's also not in rule that that's what, how to document it. So I'm still in it.
No, and again,
same favor of how I voted.
And I agree. If we can go back to the language, Ryan, if we look at the language, if it said dentist, that right now there is language that dictates how a dentist can prescribe prescription only drugs in the Dental Practice Act. There is nothing speaking to a dental therapist at all. So a dental therapist that all of a sudden says, okay, I'm in a collaborative practice agreement. The collaborative practice agreement says, you know, I'll work with the dentist to administer and dispense prescription only drugs, right? And the dentist, again, this is all going to be a new world. I mean, a dentist in Arizona is then telling the dental therapist, look, you know, given the patient, we need to, I'm going to prescribe X and then you need to go ahead and dispense X to them, whatever prescription that may be. Let's say it's an antibiotic that I think we can all get behind is pretty common. So that dental therapist then, if hopefully they're, you know, aware of and very careful, just like any licensee should be about following the law, what do they look to? How do they know what they're doing right? The collaborative practice agreement says it's all right, but you're saying then the only thing to protect the patient is the dentist making sure that practice, a collaborative practice agreement has what it needs to have in it. Here, the language says a dental therapist shall ensure. So that's the double stitch. So the dental therapist then says, okay, our collaborative practice agreement doesn't really talk about it. So just for the record, I'm not even aware of a sample collaborative practice agreement that already exists out there. I haven't seen
it.
Not yet. Exactly. So we're saying, okay, we hope that they will have all the necessary language. And then it'll get into this in detail. But I mean, Deb, I'm sure put a couple hours putting this into there. Hopefully whoever comes up with the sample, but theoretically under the law, they wouldn't even have to use the sample. They can come up with their own collaborative practice agreement. Mm-hmm. So if there's nothing in there, the dental therapist is left flapping in the wind, trying to figure out, well, what is the floor? What do I need to make sure I'm doing to cover myself now that I'm dispensing drugs? And I mean, if you look at some of these protocols, I think when we see them written out, they make a lot of sense, But if they weren't written out, I don't know if off the top of my head I would have come up with them. And that's a concern. So whether it's storage, whether it's make sure you tell the patient about XYZ, hopefully they'd all know how to fill out the patient record. I think that's a given. But as you can see, and I give the credit to Deb, there's, I think, some good detail in here. I don't necessarily think it is overkill. If it becomes overkill, there's nothing to say we can't revise this. I'm more concerned having nothing is going to leave a void and cause confusion. And that confusion could end up with a patient issue, which I would rather avoid. And that's why I brought the motion to reconsider. I'll rest there. If we vote down the motion to reconsider, we're done. And then maybe I'll have another motion that won't be yet to reconsider again. I won't go that far. But right now with the motion to reconsider on the floor, do we want to just call the vote on that and move this along?
Yeah.
So
Ryan, can we have a roll call?
Yeah, let's do a vote on this and then, yeah.
Okay.
So, Ms. Hardy, do you want to call it then? Do we want to do the roll call or Ryan? I'm sorry,
yes,
Ryan.
Yes, please. He was muted. I was waiting for him to unmute. There we go. Can we have a roll call, please?
Hardy?
No.
Dinar?
No.
Kappas?
Can I explain my vote first?
No.
Yeah. I'm going to vote no, and I'm encouraging Sean to bring this up before the board when the board considers the whole package. But my answer is no.
Murphy.
Yes.
Taylor.
Yes.
Motion fails. 3 opposed. Hardy, Dinar, and Kappa.
So my motion now is, and again, I love this group, but I may not be at that next board meeting. So just so you all know, I move that this group brings up this issue to the full board when the rules are presented to the board for approval.
Taylor seconds that.
Is that do we need to put that in motion, or is that a recommendation that we'd make?
Either is fine. And I think that Sean, I don't want to speak for you. He can probably advocate better for himself, but I think he's just ensuring that it's because it will be captured formally in the minutes to make certain carried forward.
That's why I'm making a motion, because then it has to, I mean, if it gets approved, then it has to be brought in front
okay.
of me, if I'm not here.
Okay, so in terms of
any further discussion,
I have a discussion item. I'm sorry. So here's a thought. Why don't we look at Section 1609, because it gives, you know, things that a collaborative agreement shall include. What if we add a sentence in there, maybe from Section F, saying the written collaborative practice agreement shall ensure there is a protocol that complies with E4. So that way it addresses some of the concerns I'm hearing. Hey, there needs to be some defined protocol. We don't know what the defined protocol is, so why don't we say it in the place that makes sense?
But how is that different than what's stated in statute?
Right. The issue is then you're just saying it's going to establish protocol, and all the statute says is establish protocol. So what I'm trying to get to is a base protocol. That's all. And I don't know, and Deb, you may know better than all of us, what would be that skeleton protocol? Would it be something from the pharmacist?
Yeah.
I don't think using the dentist. I mean, my comments on this section before Deb and I had our talk and I realized where she was coming from is this too little? And then she was very quick to say, Sean, it's just administering and dispensing. And I said, you're right. So it should be different than prescribing. So I don't know if we can really look to the dentist section. We're not dealing with pharmacists. So it really, it's a quandary, and you know, I don't know who best can answer that. I guess the clinicians could go to task, but like even Deb coming up with the language, as a hygienist, she doesn't have the ability to administer or dispense or prescribe. So is she the right person to come up with that? Look, I'm just a lawyer. I'm definitely not going to get involved in this type of exercise, but who is and who can come up with that protocol that makes the most sense?
Any further discussion?
Well, in terms of sort of the other discussion item for the motion that's on the table, it's sort of, you know, I mean, I understand, Mr. Murphy, your predicament. I mean, you won't be able to attend the next meeting. I mean, I'm fine with having the full board look at it. I mean, obviously, the whole rule package is something that the full board is going to look at eventually, right? So are we, like, going to gum up that, you know, whole discussion just because of 1610?
Well, the reason I bring up 1610, first off, I think this is very parallel to the anesthesia section that this committee approved having some protocols, because a lot of people said, well, you know, it's fine as is. Now, granted, we're missing a couple of the committee members today that voted in favor of the anesthesia. So I just want to make sure that it's given the same scrutiny that the anesthesia was, because we're dealing with prescription drugs. I mean, that there's multiple states out there that this is a pandemic for them long before COVID ever came around, where you have, you know, opioid abuse running wild and everything else. So I just want to be cognizant of the fact this isn't an issue that is small or irrelevant, but, you know, can be very impactful if there's not some sort of floor requirement or if people get confused. So, and again, if the board says we don't need any protocols within regs, that's fine. I just want to make sure they're cognizant that currently there is not any regulations in the Dental Practice Act whatsoever that deal with the dispensing or administering of prescription drugs.
Thank you. And Jessica raised her hand as well.
Yes, I was just going to say, if this committee wants the full board to look at this language and have a discussion about whether or not it's necessary, the easiest way to do that is to leave this rule language in the draft and keep a note here in the margins about whether it's necessary. And that'll prompt the board to have that discussion when you send this draft to the board.
So my problem with that is, you know, the board, we have some history with the board members. I mean, they don't want to go line by line, and that's the whole reason they created this committee. So I don't think the board is going to look line by line all over again. It's an up vote for the whole package or a down vote for the whole package, at least in my mind. So the better course of action would be, and of course, I mean, there are going to be stakeholders who are going to say, well, take another look at this one particular provision. There's always going to be, you know, someone saying that, and that's fine. That's the way the process works. But in terms of what the committee sends as a package to the board is a different question than telling the board or an interest group coming up in front of the full board and saying, hey, by the way, what do you think of this issue? What do you think of X? What do you think of Y? So in terms of the motion that's on the table for the committee to just forward this, you know, language to the full board, I just don't get it. I mean, it's up to the association. I mean, Mr. Murphy, I understand you are passionate about this, but I don't know if the Dental Association, whoever is their representative in front of the full board, will be passionate as you are and as articulate as you are. But let them bring it up. It's not this committee's role to, you know, shepherd and be deputized by the association to do their job in front of the full board. I would be in favor of leaving the language out as we voted on twice. And if any association wants to bring it in front of the full board, they have the right to do so. They can do it anytime they want.
Right. So I agree with you, Mr. Dinar. I appreciate that it's a full package. So I guess what I foresaw for my motion is this language gets removed from the packet. Okay. Prior to the board voting on the packet, though, there's a separate motion through my motion. They're just given this language separate and apart from that packet to say, hey, this is language that was included in there. The committee voted 3-2 to exclude it. Without it, there's not going to be any regs on the dispensing or administering prescription-only drugs by a dental therapist. But keep in mind, here's what the statutory language says. Are you all right with that being left out? They say yay or nay. Once that's done, it's onto the packet. And you're fine. I don't think it should be left in with a comment, but I do want the board to see it. And one of the primary reasons I want the board to see it. I mean, we're missing, how many are we missing? Two or three committee members today?
Three.
So, I mean, we're barely making a quorum here. So my thought is those three, they may want to know that too, and it'll just give them time to rethink it.
I think it's just two.
It's just two.
Yeah, Dr. Seaman and,
I thought Hero was on there too.
No, Hero was off as soon as he went into the presidency role of the board, and that's when we brought Mr. Murphy and Ms. Kappas into our actual committee and not just stakeholders.
Thank you, Heather.
But I think this is the only, I mean, we've had a lot of discussion about a lot of these sections and maybe haven't seen eye to eye on them, but I think this is the only one that, and it's not so much that I want in there too, I just want to hear from the clinicians, do they think that makes sense? Are they comfortable knowing that that's out there, and if so, fine.
Then we just get them. And this is Dr. Taylor. Sorry to interrupt you, but as a clinician, I agree that the board needs to hear this. It doesn't need to be skipped out. We've voted for it to be removed, but I think with your motion that I seconded, that it ought to be heard as a clinician to the board.
And it does not need to be advocated for. I think that it can be neutral and just this language was left out. The committee voted it 3-2. Without it, there's no regs. Does anyone want to reconsider that? I'm not wanting this committee to, you know, we can let them know that it got voted down 3-2.
So I like the idea that it's separated out away from the package. So the package can stand as the committee. As the committee's recommendation, but then separately to that, there's another issue that the committee wants to bring forward for their consideration.
Right.
Well, I'm fine with the separate package. I mean, the package is separate and this rule is separate, but I'm not fine with the committee recommending anything. As Mr. Murphy was saying, we are just neutral. Like, here's the language that was rejected. Do whatever you want. And at that point, whoever wants to advocate for a position can come forward. And
I'm fine with that, Mr. Dinar.
Yeah.
Maybe you'll all see me again at a meeting. Who knows? I mean, the price is right. I'm not even getting paid for this. So this is perfect.
Okay. So that being said, let's vote on that motion that's on the table.
So can we repeat the motion so I know what I'm voting for? For sure.
So the motion was by Sean, seconded by Dr. Taylor, to bring the 1610 language that it has been struck to the full board for the review apart from this full rule package.
Okay. Can we again have a roll call, please, Ryan?
Yeah. Hardy?
Aye.
Dinar?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Murphy?
Yes.
Taylor?
Yes.
Motion carries, none opposed.
This is Jessica. This is your last section on this rule packet. And I think my suggestion would be to remove it because I believe this is the language that was suggested by the tribal council, that we had extensive discussion on. And I believe the committee decided not to include any of that language.
Nope, that's correct. It's my
right.
Yeah, I'm fine with it. Yeah, we deleted it before. We don't need to revisit it. We discussed it extensively.
And already voted on it.
Right.
Okay, so I've removed it. That is the end of your document. But before you get too excited, there's still some additional questions. Okay. So we're back at the top now. Definitions. I know you're all hating me right now. Application. This definition, it appears that it's only for purposes of Article 3. My suggestion would be to remove it from your general definition section and only use it in Article 3. But further than that, why is it even necessary?
I mean, Jessica, have you searched, though, to see if it's used anywhere else?
I have.
Okay, and I'm fine with that. I agree with your – I would just include it in Article 3 then.
Right. I think it should be moved to Article 3 definitions and – I mean, assuming it's even necessary there, the whole point of defining something is because it has a unique meaning other than its common usage. I would imagine that application, you know, that seems pretty standard. That this, even defining it here means for purposes of Article 3 only, forms designated as applications and all documents and additional information the board requires to be submitted with an application. I think that that's pretty standard. I don't know that this definition is even necessary.
So is there a motion to move it?
My recommendation would actually be to just remove it completely. It doesn't even need to be moved to Article 3 because it's a common usage definition.
Jessica, I don't know the historical underpinnings of this, but I would imagine the reason we are looking at this definition is because someone submitted an application without the supporting documents. So they decided we got to make this crystal clear. So if you don't see that as being an issue going forward, then I'm all in favor of removing it entirely. I think we've all been on the receiving end of, you know, fill this out and include XYZ, and all we do is get the filled out form and not XYZ. So I don't know if on the application it's stating that is good enough, or if someone could ever make issue of the fact that I submitted the paper application but not the supporting documents. So you BODEX have to acknowledge that and accept it. Maybe I'm in some sort of dream world, but that's just kind of what I see maybe the basis for that definition.
And this is Diana. I mean, I understand. I mean, historically, there must have been some very interesting reason for
right.
like this. But I think right now, like with our board staff, I think our application process is very streamlined. I mean, I would be fine with just deleting it. I mean, it's almost a tautology, right? An application means an application plus documents. I mean, yeah, of course.
I agree. So do we have a motion?
Yeah, my motion is to delete the definition for application.
Taylor seconds.
We have a motion and second. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you. So my next question is on the definition of certificate holder. It says here means a denturist who practices denture technology under ARS Title 32, Chapter 11, Article 5. My question here is, are there denturists that are not certificate holders? And the reason I'm asking that is because as I was looking through your rules and matching definitions with how they're used in your rules to make sure everything was formatted appropriately and things, defined terms were capitalized, things like that, it seemed odd to me that you're using certificate holder just to mean denturist, but then you also use denturist. So that's why I'm trying to figure out if there are denturists who are not certificate holders.
I don't think so.
So then we are potentially thinking of deleting the certificate holder definition then.
Well, I think that I think it should be one or the other. You should either have just denturist or you should have certificate holder. So what I would suggest is I'll go through the rules and find where you're using denturist and where you're using certificate holder and see which makes more sense. And since certificate holder is a defined term, I would, just going off the top of my head, lean towards changing denturist to certificate holder.
Well, I mean, so denturist is a term that is already defined in the statute.
Mm-hmm.
our rules will just keep saying denturist, right? I mean, we wouldn't even use the term certificate holder for anything. I mean, that's the, we are just regulating denturists as it's defined in the statute. Mm-hmm. So in my mind, we don't need, but again, I mean, Jessica, you know, you have looked at this more than I have. And it looks like there are too many places where we use the term certificate holder. And if by that just denturist, and I would, in my mind, I would be thinking of just changing all of the places where the term certificate holder appears to the term denturist.
Mm-hmm. My other question would be, so if you're looking at my screen and you see where I've located the various places, at least in these rules, where you're using the term certificate holder, you seem to also be using licensee. Would a denturist not be a licensee?
No, because, okay. Yeah, they hold a certificate, whereas the licensees are dentists, dental hygienists, and now dental therapists, who would then hold a license as opposed to a certificate.
Got it. Okay, yeah. So that then would be my suggestion, would be to remove the definition of certificate holder, and where it refers to certificate holder in your rules, replace it with denturist.
Great idea.
So I make a motion to delete the definition of certificate holder from section 101, and in all sections use the term certificate holder to replace that term with the term denturist.
Taylor seconds.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries.
Okay.
Did we have like a 5-minute break for those who need it?
Thank you. I could use one.
Yeah. It is 10:10. We will take a recess for 5 minutes roughly and be back roughly 10:15.
All right.
Are you going to put the timer, Ryan? Thank you.
Yes, I'm going to try.
Okay, it is 10:16. We'll call the meeting back to session. Jessica, we'll let you pick up where you left off.
Okay. Oh, I'm not present. Am I presenting anymore? Can you guys see my screen or no?
No, you're not.
Yeah, we can see it.
No.
Oh, I can see it.
Okay, give me one second.
Is there error?
I didn't love it how, like, my computer apparently is doing so much different things than yours.
There we go. I was going to say, Sean, I don't know how you did that one now.
Yeah.
Okay, so the next comment or question that I have is in reviewing the rules on other stuff that was coming up as we were going through this document, I was double checking your definitions. It doesn't look like any of your rules use this term anymore. Closed, and I'm going to butcher it, closed subgingival?
Subgingival.
Subgingival, thank you. Curtage?
Curatage.
Curatage, okay. Doesn't appear in your rules anymore, so I'm suggesting you remove it.
I'm going to defer to Deb on that one. Deb, what's your thoughts?
Yeah, that's true. I can support removing it. It is a term used in statute, though, and it's not defined in statute. And so I think that sometimes there were definitions put in rule because of what was in statute. And maybe that's not appropriate, but I think that might be why it's there.
Correct. If you would only put definitions in rules that are terms that are used in your rules. If it's a definition that needs to be put into statute, then that's a whole nother discussion.
Okay. Good for me then.
So then I'm just trying to understand this. The statute doesn't define this. So one way of thinking about this is, well, maybe the statute needs to define it, and that's a whole different process. I mean, imagine going to one of the few legislators I'm thinking of and saying, hey, we need a definition for sub whatever, I can't even say the word. I mean, that's going to be interesting.
Right.
does the profession benefit from having a definition?
Personally, I would say no. I mean, I think I think dental professionals know what it is. So, you know, there's a lot of terms. There's a lot of technical terms in our statute that refer to procedures that a layman wouldn't necessarily totally get or understand, but certainly the professionals would. And in this case, the professionals involved would, dental hygienists and dentists and dental therapists, actually.
I'm wondering, would we be able to use that term and resuscitate the prescription only drug section? Maybe that'd be the proper place for it, right? All right.
Well, let's delete it. My motion is to.
I tried, Mr. Dinar.
Do we have a second?
I second it.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries.
Okay, brings me to the next term. This, I think, was something that you guys had considered adding. Perhaps it related to something else that you were suggesting, but that didn't mm-hmm. ultimately make it into this draft. And so this term, community health center patient of record, actually isn't used. So I recommend not including it in this draft.
You're exactly right, Jessica. That's why it's there. And so it is no longer needed. So I move that term be deleted.
Dino, second. Okay.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries.
Okay, this brings us down to, again, another term that doesn't seem to be used in your rules, dental laboratory technician or dental technician. So I recommend removing it.
I move that the term dental laboratory technician or dental technician be removed.
Dinar seconds. And discussion, I would just note that the term is already defined in statute. We need to redefine it.
Right.
Thank you. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Motion carries.
Okay, moves us down to the definition of designee. Again, the purpose of definitions in rules is to assign a term a special meaning that isn't part of its normal common usage. Here you're defining a designee, which I don't think is necessary, again, because it's the common normal meaning of designee. So I would recommend removing it.
So how have we used the term? I mean, I don't see, I mean, when I think of a designee, I'm thinking of, you know, some of the consultants that the board hires to make a recommendation on particular cases. But I don't think our rules need to define it. I mean, it's pretty standard agency law from the 18th century.
So in all of these rules, the only place where it's used is when you're referring to the president's designee, which is also a defined term. So again, I don't think you need to define it by itself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, got it. Thank you. Mm-hmm. I make a motion we delete the definition for the term designee.
Taylor, second.
We have a motion and second. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Motion carries.
Okay, my next question was relating to direct supervision, and it said only for purposes of Article 7 and now 16, but I had a question about Rule 601C, and then also whether or not direct supervision is already defined in statute in 32-1281. So let me see if I can pull up. Let me pull up 601 real quick.
And probably it's not going to be in this Word document because that's, you know, in the longer PDF, the whole rule package, right?
Correct. So Article 6 is dental hygienists. In particular, 601C refers to the board shall ensure that a dental hygienist is qualified to administer local anesthesia and nitrous oxide analgesia as authorized by 32-1281 by requiring evidence that the hygienist has completed courses and techniques taught at a recognized dental hygiene school or recognized dental school as defined. And then and the reason I ask this is because C7, when it talks about the various areas that they have to pass, one of them is clinical practice under direct supervision. And again, it says as defined in 32-1281H1, which is why I wondered if direct supervision was already defined.
Direct supervision is already defined for dental hygienists in statute.
Okay.
And relevant to that particular rule, it actually no longer applies because of changes in statute. So when we get to the point of cleaning up Article 6, that language will probably go away. But it is already defined in statute. And sometimes, and I think this might be here, which is interesting because when it's in statute for dental hygienists, it also seems to pertain to dental assistants. So and the definition is slightly different, I think. We may have to look and compare it, but it may not be. So even when it pertains to dental assistants, it may not be necessary, which is, I think, what Article 7 is, right? In rule.
Yeah, let me look.
They think it's Article 6 for dental hygienists and Article 7 for dental assistants.
Correct.
Yeah. And so if we already have in statute a definition of direct supervision that applies to everything pertaining in that article in statute, which does include dental assistance, then do we need this here as well? And then direct supervision for dental therapists is also defined in statute. And it's a little bit, it's definitely different than what pertains to dental hygienists.
So it seems to me that what constitutes direct supervision is different for dental assistants, dental therapists, and denturists, I assume.
Yes.
So why do we need a global definition that kind of mushes together a bunch of things? I mean, I would assume, and remind me, Jessica, if I'm not correct on this, each of the articles pertaining to each of those licensed professionals would include a direct supervision definition if the statute does not already include it. So if the statute does say direct supervision for denturists means XYZ and then direct supervision for technicians means ABC, then just leave it at that. We don't need to define it again.
Well, my only issue though is I think some of the statutes may not define it in certain instances. So this is kind of the catch-all, if that makes sense. So, like, I know in statute, direct supervision is, I think it is in there. Deb, is it in there in the statute for dental hygienists?
Yes, it is. It's part of its definitions. I think it's in 1281 at the end. There's some definitions. But it refers to the whole article. It says for this article, these are the definitions that apply.
Because I know and in a prior life, when I was with the orthodontist, I did a lot of looking at the different direct general supervision requirements. In some states, unfortunately, you have it defined in statute for this specific provider or allied team member, and then it's not defined for this. So then people are like, well, I guess we'll just extrapolate the definition there. And so I think that what I don't want to do is get rid of this without having done that exercise, Jessica. And I don't know if anyone has.
Well, we can look at statute. The statute will cover, if we look at the statute 1281 for dental hygienists, but if we look at it, that article in statute, it covers dental assistants as well. So we've got that covered. It for direct supervision as well as for general supervision. And then for dental therapists, there is only direct supervision is the only thing that applies. It doesn't, there is no general supervision as we define it for dental therapists. They have two levels of supervision, direct supervision and supervision via a collaborative practice agreement. And those, and that all of that is in statute.
So then who is left for whom this definition of direct supervision would apply?
Well, in this case, it's applying to 701, which is dental assistants. And it is applying to Article 16, which is now going to be dental therapists, right?
Right.
Well, but so here's the thing. And I'm doing a quick search of the combined statutes and regulations on Bodex's website. I see the definition for direct supervision for a hygienist, and that's specific to a hygienist because it says hygienist in there. There's the direct supervision for a dental therapist. And I'm not seeing it for the assist.
Oh, you make a good point. You caught a nuance to that I didn't catch. So the definition for direct supervision here is pretty specific to dental hygienists, even though it says for the purposes of this article. So when I was looking at the purposes of this article, you know, there are within this article, there are a couple of statutes that refer to dental assisting. But because of the definition itself, you're right, it is very specific to dental hygienists. So we don't have a definition for dental assistants for direct supervision. or general supervision in that case, I think, because I think it's going to be.
Well, no, because there is one for purpose of Article 7, that a licensed dentist in the office is available to provide immediate treatment or care to a patient observe a dental assistant's work. It's just, it gets, bottom line.
Yeah. Let's in leave. Rule, you're talking about in rule, right?
Yeah, let's leave this, because this stuff gets super hairy, and I wish we could just do this quickly, but I think it we could end up deleting something that doesn't make sense in the long run.
So, I'm agreeing with you. I think the better question is, do we include Article 16 for dental therapists?
That's right. That's probably not necessary because it is defined in statute.
That's just what I was thinking as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I would agree. Hold on, I would agree with that, I believe. Let me double check though.
And that makes sense to me because then
Article 3.1 defines it.
Yeah.
For dental therapists. Yeah. So just leave it there and then get rid of the dental therapist later on.
Mm-hmm. And so this definition is untouched, which makes more sense.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense to me now.
Very good.
But Jessica, we appreciate you trying to tighten all this up. I mean, that's great. You're thinking about that.
So yeah, I wanted
that
to make sure.
That was a good catch. That was a good catch.
I wanted to make sure we weren't including something where we shouldn't be and that we were including everything where we needed to. So
if we could get the Dental Practice Act down to like 10 pages, wouldn't that be great? Yeah.
I don't know that that'll ever happen.
Yeah, right.
Okay. So that brings us down to dispense for profit. Again, not something that's ever used in any of your rules. So I'm suggesting remove it.
Sorry, Jessica, do we need a motion for that change?
Oh, for direct supervision?
Yeah, because the blue, I think, was changed previously by the committee, and now we are changing it.
We're undoing that, yeah.
So let's just do a motion for, you know, just keeping Article 7 and deleting whatever you deleted.
Taylor seconds it. I told my wife we'd be done with this by 11.
Well, we're scheduled till 12:30. So.
You're right on time.
That's right. Okay, so we did have a motion and a second.
Yes.
You got off. Okay. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries.
Okay, that brings us to dispense for profit. Not used in your rules. I'm recommending removal.
I move that the dispense for profit definition be removed.
Taylor seconds it.
We have a motion to second. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries.
This brings us to general supervision, again, for purposes of Article 7. And my question was, what about 601A and B? I think those questions have been answered, so I'm going to delete my comment. Mm-hmm. Again, we're going down to the definition of jurisdiction. My question is it really necessary? Sean, you may want to weigh in on this, but my sense is that we're not giving jurisdiction any sort of special meaning that it would otherwise be given in this context. So I don't know that it's necessary to define jurisdiction in your rules.
Well, I mean, isn't there a empowering statute or regulation that more or less says that this is what the board has the ability to do?
Correct.
And also Mr.
Dinar, what are your thoughts?
Well, and there are also going to be all sorts of statutes that say what the board's jurisdiction is, like subpoenas and whatnot. So, I mean, the whole Dental Practice Act is the jurisdiction statute. I mean, that's all the things that the board can do. And I don't think we need a definition in the regulations.
Yeah. I mean, who it really affects is Ryan. Ryan, do you see any issue there? Because, again, by deleting this language, someone could make that what I would consider erroneous argument. You don't have jurisdiction over me. I hope that wouldn't happen. But, I mean, has this ever come up? Have you heard any war stories? that say that this has ever been an issue?
Yeah, we send them to the OAH if that happens.
Yeah. Oh, it has happened. It did happen.
What's that?
There was a license holder that said the board had no jurisdiction over them.
Yeah, they say it a lot, and we just say, well, they do. So, and even people that hold a license, and I can't give a specific example, but they don't hold a license or a certificate. And although we don't have any jurisdiction over them and what they do, we have some jurisdiction. I always add myself to the board. The board does have some jurisdiction to prevent them from continuing to practice what they're practicing if they believe it is practicing dentistry. So there is some of that. And I don't, Scott's probably, looks like he's still on. He may have a better comment on this jurisdiction meaning.
It's like the unlicensed practice of law.
Yeah, we just don't want to clip your wings by removing this if there's an intent that is in there for a reason. Scott?
Yeah, I think, Brian, my only question would be, and this is just because I haven't been with the board very long, but my only question would be what the history is for why someone felt that needed to be in there to begin with. I think you're right that typically jurisdiction isn't something that has to be defined this way in the statutes, because the board's organic statutes do outline their jurisdiction with regards to regulating, in this case, dentists, dental hygienists, et cetera. I mean, that's all contained in the primary statutes for the board. But it would be interesting to look at the history of why somebody wanted to put this in there to begin with.
Yeah, and I don't have an answer as to why it's here. It doesn't hurt to keep it. But I'm game for whatever the board or this group wants to do, and then ultimately the board.
I don't have a preference either way. It's whatever the board. It was a suggestion because it didn't make sense in terms of, rule writing to keep it in there, but I don't think it does any harm.
I'm in favor of keeping it.
Okay. Hmm.
Anybody have a different opinion?
Nope. Let's move on.
Yeah, well, I have a different opinion, but it's fine. Then.
Okay.
All right, so we'll move on to licensee. This particular definition was a little confusing because you refer to retired licensee, which is odd because you've already defined retired.
Do they mean retired?
I'm sorry?
Okay. You want to go back to that, then, what you're asking us to make a revision on?
So really, I'm just saying that it's awkward when you use retired here. So
I'm trying to, as I see these for the first time, give you a basis that probably is way off as to why they put that in there. But I think the fact they defined retired and then they used retired licensee is probably so if the licensee does something while they're still licensed and then retires, that the board still has jurisdiction over them.
I'm fine with it. Like I said, all I'm doing is noticing things as I'm going through and checking other stuff. So I don't think it's caused you guys any issues to date. Yeah. So if you want to leave it, I have no problem with leaving it.
This is Dr. Taylor. Leave it. It's fine.
Yeah. I think we can leave it too, but I think it's weird that the definition for retired is just the word retired, and yet it refers specifically to it's referring actually to a retired licensee. So that's odd, but
yeah, it should be retired.
licensee. That should be the definition.
Jessica, you were missed 50 years ago when these were originally put together, all right?
You're right, right.
Well, we can do this. We can change retired licensee in the definition here and capitalize it, and then change the definition of retired to retired licensee.
We could do that. We may just want to leave it as it. I mean, if it's never yeah. come up, I don't want to be too in the weeds here. If Dr. Taylor misses that 11 o'clock, I hate to know what would happen. So
we can always save it for your next 5-year review report, too.
Woohoo!
Right.
Sean's looking forward to that, right, Sean?
Yeah, I'll be back on for that one. I'll just
sign me dark. Up.
I'll keep darkening everyone's doorstep.
I mean, doesn't everybody look forward to those?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
All right. So that brings us to my next comment here, which is actually, funny enough, the previous 5-year review report indicated that this definition was no longer used and necessary. So I recommend that you remove it.
Deb, what's your thoughts on that one?
It's fine. Right. No, it's not a term that's used any longer. So in our statute or rule. So I'm good.
Sure.
So I make a motion to delete it.
Taylor, second.
We have a motion, a second. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries.
All right. Similarly, same thing in the 2016 5-year review report. You guys, well, not you guys, but the board, determined that these two terms, patient of record and periodontal examination and assessment, were no longer used in your rules, and so they're not necessary, and I'm recommending you remove them.
Patient of record's not used?
Nope.
Huh. It's used in statute, Sean, but it's not used here.
My thought on that, here's the reason I would leave those, is because, honestly, I could see rules coming down the path that does require those definitions. And by that, the one that immediately comes to mind, like teledentistry usually has a lot of patient of record verbiage. So I would leave that so we don't have to then come up with a new definition. Periodontal examination and assessment, I mean, that's another one that I think, what do you think about that, Deb? I know it's not used, but to me, that's not
well,
an archaic term.
Yeah. Again, what we have in statute, we have there was some alterations, and so the term used in our statute is periodontal assessment. The word assessment is defined, so it's just that just makes a type of assessment. So I don't see the reason for that definition at all, even in statute. And I would just say that the patient of record definition would be more appropriate to hash out and deal with and find what might be appropriate in statute rather than here when we don't have anything in rule yet to substantiate it.
Additionally,
so I'm still in favor of deleting them both.
Additionally, because the board already submitted the 5-year review report in 2016 and told GIRC that it wanted to get rid of these rules, that should take a little weight in your decision.
And also, I mean, in my mind, what's a patient of record? I mean, you're a patient or not? Like, just what's a patient of record? I don't understand.
Well, it's what's written down in the record or in the notes given to so as we have to transfer records to some other office that is there.
So then you're just a patient then, right?
Well, here's the problem I'm having. Patient of record, it's defined in regulations. It's not defined in statute. So by having it defined in the regulations, that might provide a lot of clarity for the statute. We're not going to go in and start amending the statutes. So I just leave it. I'd leave patient of record. I'm fine with getting rid of the periodontal examination and assessment.
So am I.
But Jessica already told us that it's not really appropriate to have definitions in rule that really only apply or make sense only for statute. That if you need a definition pertaining to statute, then it should be in statute.
and the board already told GERC that it was going to get rid of these rules back in 2016, and considering that we are now in 2021, I believe the board just reiterated that it was going to get rid of these definitions because they are not used in their rules.
Well, I think we ought to call those guys up and have them come down.
Yeah. Well, look, I'll say this. If they want to get rid of it, more power to them. I could tell you, speaking on behalf of the Arizona Dental Association, we do not want to get rid of patient record in the definition section. If GERC does it, that's fine. I'm not going to be voting in favor to get rid of that because I think it provides clarity. So my motion would be to delete periodontal examination and assessment from the definitions.
And leave patient record there.
Yep, which is already, I mean, there. It's just right. She indicated to delete it. So you're right, Dr. Taylor.
Taylor seconds.
So we have a motion and a second. Any further discussion?
So I'm fine with both of the terms of the way the motion is on the table. I'll have to vote no because, yeah.
No, I think I'm going to make a separate motion to delete patient of record.
Yeah, so then that's all you have to do.
We'll just separate them. We won't deal with them together.
Yeah. But you're probably going to lose Dr. Taylor standing second, but go ahead. All right.
Right.
Okay, so the motion on the table is to delete just the one term so far because that's the only change being made.
Yep.
Correct.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries.
And then I move to delete the term patient of record from the definitions.
Dino seconds.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Can we do a roll call vote, please, Ryan?
Gertie?
I'm sorry.
Dino?
Yes.
Kappas?
Aye.
Murphy?
No.
Taylor?
No.
Motion carries. Two opposed, Mr. Murphy and Dr. Taylor.
Dr. Taylor, this is Brian. If I can interrupt real quick, Ms. Hardy. If you need to leave at 11, they'll still have a quorum.
It's okay. No, it's okay. My wife will I'll have to make something up for us. No problem.
You can blame me if it helps. It's my fault for taking you all through the rules one last time. Which brings us down to the definition of polish. The term that you use in your rules is actually polishing, not polish. Mm-hmm. So my recommendation would be to change polish to polishing.
I move to accept the revisions as presented on the screen for polishing.
Taylor seconds.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries.
Okay, that brings us down to the definition of public member. Again, not used in any of your rules. And again, same issue in the previous five-year review reports. The board has already recommended to GERC that they needed to get rid of this.
And also public member is defined in the statute, in the composition of the board section. Being a public member, I should know.
Right.
So I make a motion to delete the definition of public member from the rules.
Taylor second.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries.
Okay, so my next question, moving down to the definition of restricted permit holder. My question was, why is this defined separately when it already seems to be included in the definition of licensee?
Restricted permit holder, it might be just because it only applies to dentists and dental hygienists, not dental therapists. Licensee would apply to all license providers. So I think we need to leave it.
Yeah, we should leave the definition in here.
That brings us down to retired, which I had a few questions on. The first being, what about a retired restricted permit holder? Should that be included?
Yeah, but there's still a restricted permit holder is still a dentist or dental hygienist.
Okay.
Yeah. It's a good question, though. So, yeah, I think we're good on that one.
All right. What about a retired certificate holder? Irrelevant because we're getting rid of certificate holder because they are a dentist. Whoopsies. Okay. Yeah, so that's all of my questions. I think we're good there.
Okay.
All right, so that brings us down to really the meat of your rules, licensure by credential. There was a suggestion in our discussions that we needed to add in the word psychomotor to clinical examination. So I just wanted to make sure that I've done that accurately.
Is that accurate? I have no idea. That's the first I've ever seen the term psychomotor. Is that accurate?
Yes.
Yeah. Sorry, Dr. Fisher, add something on.
Yeah, no, that's fine. It psychomotor is where the examination is given and stuff. So there are
okay.
skills.
Okay.
So I think I was like instead of using terms like hands-on and things like that, psychomotor is a more appropriate term. So.
Okay, that's fine.
I would like us to stop at, I'm not sure how far Jessica's going to go, but I'd like us to stop at 206B5 when we get there.
We're there, Deb.
Okay, very good. So this particular one, so this was in licensure by credentials for a dental therapist. And as I look at this particular one, and I know we voted to include it, but it does stand out in that it doesn't show up for dental hygienists or for dentists. And just in the interest of consistency, I'd like to have a discussion again as to why we think it's necessary to have in rule for dental therapists, but not for dental hygienists or dental or dentists when they have the same statutory requirements of the schools that is required for licensing. I want it to be consistent. So it should either be deleted out of here or added to dental assisting or dental hygiene and dentist and for dentists. And maybe this is also a thing with for the staff to address again. I think Sherry might have answered this question before, but what I noticed is that on the board applications, a request for school transcripts is made on applications for licensure by credential for dentists and dental hygienists, and I assume they would do that for dental therapists. So the question is, even though it's not in rule, the transcripts are being requested for all the professions. And so does the board actually act on that to make sure that the school is a recognized school as defined in statute? Because, case in point, some schools in Alabama would not meet the definition as a recognized school for dental hygiene. So I just wonder if that is something that is done, even though it's not in rule as something that is supposed to be submitted. So again, it's just kind of a consistency issue with me. It either needs to be in all of them or none of them.
So Deb, here's the thing, and I appreciate the comment. If I recall, this is one of those sections that we spent plenty of time on going back and forth. I think at this point, it's inappropriate to reconsider this given that we have previously voted on it with people who are not here. I don't think anyone thought we would be revisiting rules that we already voted on. So my thought, so we don't engage in this exercise where we start reconsidering sections that have significant or substantial changes, is just to let sleeping dogs lie. It's already been voted on. To the extent you want to bring it up to the full board when they vote to approve, can do that. But I mean, we've got two board members that didn't even think that this would be discussed.
Right. I understand that, but I take issue with you wanting to exclude it because we've made exceptions a couple of times. There was another issue that this group had voted on already and was brought up again and that the board had agreed to. Case in point was the language around cultural competency in the continuing education language. And we reconsidered that. The board had already voted to accept that language. And this group said, oh yeah, let's reconsider it and talk about it again at the request of Mr. Dinar. So I object that when I make a similar request that we can't reconsider it.
Well, but Deb, I'm talking about two different things. So if you want to bring this in front of the board, you have every opportunity to do so. As far as this committee is concerned, we've not reconsidered anything that the committee's voted on. Now, during a meeting with us all on, we may have considered a section, but we've not gone back to a prior section and reconsidered anything. That those chapters have been closed and we've moved on in the book. So I think at this point, again, we've debated this. We've set forth our points. It's been voted on by a more complete group of the committee than we have here today. And my thought would be to continue on and not get into the discussion again, or we're signing ourselves up for hours. And then where does it stop?
This is my only request, my singular only request. I don't have any other areas that I'm going to ask this group to reconsider, if that helps.
This is Jessica. So for what it's worth, I've been looking in other rules because the board is working on other rulemakings besides the dental therapy rulemaking. And one of the changes that we've been trying to do, and Ryan, go ahead and correct me if I'm wrong, is making sure that when you're looking for official documentation, that it's coming from the issuing entity and not just something that can be slapped together, for lack of a better word, by someone who's trying to get a license, to ensure that the documentation for those sorts of things are accurate and true, and not something that is fabricated. So those are changes that we're making in other areas of the rules to make sure that these mm-hmm. sorts of things are coming directly from the issuing institution.
So you're saying the way it's worded is following what they're changing in other sections, Jessica?
Correct.
Right. I still stand by, look, there's parts of these things I'd like to revisit for the consistency of what we've already done and to keep moving forward, and also just proper notice. I'm not going to bring that up. I don't think this should be brought up. I appreciate that where you're coming from. I appreciate it. The first time around, we ran it up and down and around and voted on it, and I think we got to move forward.
Then I'm going to make a motion as somebody who voted on the prevailing side to adopt this. I have my parliamentary rights to ask this group to reconsider this item. So I move for this group to reconsider item number 5.
I don't think you can make that motion because it hasn't been properly noticed. We're reconsidering something that no one thought would be considered today.
That's not true. The whole NPR is up for consideration.
It's not up for consideration. Every time we've tackled the next section, we haven't started from the beginning. We haven't said this is an open forum to discuss any section within the regs. We've always moved forward. We've not looked back. And I mean, we've had what, 5 or 6 meetings of this nature?
But it is agenda eyes for a notice of proposed rulemaking to allow for Title IV, Chapter 11, Articles 1, 2, 3, 4, 7, 15, and 16. So if it falls within those sections, it is agenda eyes that way. Regardless of how we've proceeded through our discussions, it is agenda eyes.
I think we're opening up a Pandora's box. I'm on the record in opposition to this, but Ms. Hardy, if you want to move forward, that's your prerogative.
Okay, so we have a motion. Is there a second on the table? Then correct me because I've never had this happen, but without a second, then the motion dies, correct?
Yes.
Correct.
Yeah, and it's for failure to, it failed for lack of a second.
Okay, so that motion will die on the table. I understand your heart of where you're coming from, Deb. But I agree with Sean.
Okay, so that moves us down to Article 3, and we're in 301A4. A. And basically we are saying if applying for a dental licensure by examination, a copy of the certificate or scorecard sent to the board directly from a psychomotor clinical examination administered by a state or testing agency that meets the requirements of 32.12.33.2. And my question here was, what requirements are contained in this statute that are not contained here? In other words, why is this necessary?
That's where we had, it's the Western Regional Examining Board, examination or clinical examination. I guess we could just say we could get rid of the subsection 2. But see, we did that throughout, Jessica. I mean, that was intentional language that we, you can see it in a few sentences down, it says the same exact thing. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, let's not revisit this because we have talked about and we have, you know, very carefully inserted or not inserted.
I mean, trust me, there's things I want to reconsider for the sake of this group. I am holding back and I'm not going to do that. But
oh, me too. I agree.
Because that will just, man, this really, I think we can get it all done today.
My wife thanks you on that.
Okay, so that brings us down to, some of these comments are just notes for me, because obviously I'm going to have to go through and double check formatting and everything before it moves further in the rulemaking process. So this is just a note to myself to double check statutory references. That brings us down to a new C, the certificate or scorecard must indicate that the applicant passed the examination within the 5 years immediately before the date the application is filed with the board. My question here was, why is this language necessary in this section, but not in A or B?
Can you scroll up to A and B? Mm-hmm.
Oh, I see. Mm-hmm.
So I think here we're in A and B, it seems like we're saying you have to, you know, pass the examination within the 5 years immediately before the date, but we don't say anything about a scorecard or a certificate.
Well, it does. The certificate or scorecard, there's B, must indicate the applicant passed examination within 5 years immediately before the date. Certificate or scorecard must indicate that I passed examination with 5 years immediately before the date the application is filed with the board. Isn't that the exact same language?
It's in B.
Yeah, it's in okay. B and it's in A as well.
So it's just written differently in C.
I don't think it's written differently in C. It might be written a little differently in A.
Well, so
they just at the end of B, you have the application must also include the applicants and the applicant's Arizona dental hygiene license number.
Right. So it's A.
But even in A, I mean, it's the same language, is it not? That meets the requirements indicating it just.
Yeah, I mean, A is a little convoluted the way it reads, but it's fine.
It's just
and REB, and like we had all of that discussion, and it makes sense the way it's written.
I think with this, and Jessica, you may recall, with all of it, I mean, we spent a lot of time tracking this language down, mm-hmm. and so I understand it may not track perfectly, but this wasn't hastily put together. So my thought is, that is what we wanted it to say. There might have been a reason that can better explain than me, my ramblings today as to why we did that, but I think there was a purpose for it.
So looking at the language, I think what I was trying to get at was that it seems the requirement is there in each of these. It's just there in a different way.
Mm-hmm. And even in saying that, if I'm not mistaken, when we went through this, and Deb, you remind, but I think there was a reason for that. Like we had discussed how, because remember, we initially tried to put them all together, and then we said we can't put them all together. We need to separate them out.
Right. But and I think it's just, do, I think we were just working from the language that was already there.
I think what it has to do, though, go up real quick, Jessica. I think what it has to do with is the statutory references that are being cited. So you see each one of those is different. And that's why. So we tried as best we could to replicate it. And there might have been a change in the language when we looked at those statutory sections. But each one of those is different. And that probably explains why it's repeated three times. And maybe when you look at the statutes, you can understand why A is slightly different than the language of B and C.
Yeah, I'm fine.
And by the way, I should mention, Jessica, thank you for pointing these things. I mean, this is why we have you. Don't take it the wrong way. You are just, you know, falling along.
This is Dr. Taylor. Jessica, you're doing great. Let's,
thank you. Great. I'm not easily offended, guys. And sadly, I live.
But no reason to be offended. I mean, this has been a laborious process that we've all gone through. So, I mean, even some of us, I think we try to put it out of mind. So.
Okay. So that brings us to fees. And here, what was my comment? For clarity, consider a retired licensee or a disabled licensee. Mm. Oh, just clarifying. So when you read this, a fee for a retired or disabled dentist, really you're talking about a fee for a retired dentist or a disabled dentist, separating the two, if that makes sense.
And then, so couldn't you strike a retired? Yeah, so consider. Yeah, so a retired, so you could just strike all that language and just say for a retired licensee or a disabled licensee, be they a dentist, dental hygienist, or a dental therapist, the fee is $15 and shall be paid by yada, yada, yada.
And Deb, I don't even know you need to enumerate out all the different licensees. Just say licensee.
No, exactly. I'm saying, yeah. So you would replace licensee with all the different names. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I like it.
And the word retired is defined as all of those people, so we don't need to.
Right. So retired licensee or disabled licensee, the fee is.
Yeah.
Strike all the rest.
Is that a motion, Deb?
Yes, it is. That's a motion.
I'll second it.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries.
And we are striking then dentist, dental therapist, dental denturist, or dental hygienist.
That was included in your motion, right?
Yes, that was included in my motion. Perfect. Just making sure, Jessica.
Yes, sorry.
Because it's all, yeah, it's coming at you like hose water out of a hose here.
Yes.
I think you could put the licensee, Jessica, on the other side of disabled. So it'll say retired or disabled licensee.
That was kind of part of my comment. I wanted to separate the two for clarity, but if you guys are fine with combining them, then I'm okay too.
Well, and to really get in the weeds, isn't up above retired, remember the definition of retired is just retired, and then within that definition includes licensees, so we're probably good if you were to move it. I'm fine with that, moving it on the other side to disabled. Or you've got to say it twice. Retired licensee or disabled licensee.
Mm-hmm. I kind of like it separated, as Jessica
that's
submitted.
Fine.
And that's what
fine.
My motion was, so I don't.
Okay. And we already voted on that. So I'm
or disabled licensee is
I'm
15.
All right with that.
And shall be paid. Yeah.
Okay. So as expressly authorized under statute, the licensure renewal fee for a retired licensee or disabled licensee is $15 and shall be paid by method authorized by law.
Correct. Real quick for the renewal fee, Ryan, should we change that based on what mm-hmm. has happened? No?
So that was a discussion we had during this rules group meeting. Because these are, if you set it in rule or change it in rule, then you got to change it again. But statute allows the board to make a change or look at the fees every 3 years, so they can do it all the time. I don't even know if we could probably eliminate the fees altogether, but maybe that's another discussion for another day.
Yeah. Okay. Just wanted to check.
I thought there was some kind of a statute that required all agencies to have their fees in rule.
Oh, Scott would probably know. I don't think you have to have them in rule.
I'm sorry, I missed the first part of that question, Ryan.
The question was that all agencies are required to have fees in rule.
I couldn't answer that off the top of my head. I believe so, but I couldn't answer that off the top of my head. I can certainly staff that, though.
It's probably not necessary.
And we looked at this, and we are fine with it. Let's
yeah.
On.
Yeah.
Okay. So that brings, and this may be a question for staff. So that brings us down to the examination fees for the jurisprudence examination.
So that's a legislative fixed question, so we can't change the rules until that happens, was my recollection from previous discussion. So let's just leave it as it is right now.
Do you want any comments about this to go to the board when you present this draft to them?
Yeah, maybe just add that the board has already directed staff to start or to get a sponsor for a bill to remove the jurisprudence exam.
Is it possible that the legislation would go through and go into effect before the rules package goes through?
Probably not.
Okay.
Yeah, and we're on the deadline because of the all the new stuff.
Okay.
Sorry,
You're doing great, Jessica. You're doing great.
Thank you. Moving along. Oh, this is just a note to myself. Like I said, I always have to go through and make sure that cross-references and statutes and defined terms are all formatted appropriately. So nitrous oxide and oxygen analgesia is a defined term. So I'll be going through your rules before this draft goes to the board. That's my last-ditch effort to get everything together and make those types of changes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, this brings me to another question, and actually this question might actually be one for both you and anesthesia committee, because I think they also have rules that they're working on relating to mobile permits. And so my question is, should mobile dental permit holder be defined? I don't even know that mobile dental permit is defined. So I'm honestly not even sure what that is.
And this did come up during the anesthesia investigation committee meeting as well, because of the whole fact that an anesthesiologist can travel to other locations, but they're still a dentist under the regulation of the board. So is it necessary that we define a mobile dentist anesthesia provider and whatever? And so it may be worth bringing it up again, but maybe before the whole board and just maybe remove the vernacular altogether, because ultimately there's still a licensed whatever, a dentist in this case, I would imagine.
Yeah, because I don't think you have a definition of mobile permit, do you?
There is a mobile permit. Isn't it in statute? Somewhere.
Because, I mean, I don't even see any specific fees. Do we have fees for the mobile permit itself?
No.
So that's kind of why I was confused about what the mobile permit is. What do you have to do to get one? What does it allow you to do? Should it be defined? Can any of these dental professional and professionals have one? Like, could a hygienist have a mobile permit? The whole mobile concept to me was very vague throughout your rules. And like I said, this was something that I was going to bring up with the anesthesia committee as well, because it appears in the rules that they're working on too. And maybe it's a discussion that this committee or the anesthesia committee doesn't want to tackle, but it's something that the full board should consider when they're looking at these rules.
Well, I guess isn't the mobile dental permit, so a mobile dental facility, that's under Article 8.
Right. That's what I was just looking at. And Article 8 does address that.
It's pretty involved.
And there is a permit that has to be obtained.
Yeah. So you might have not seen that, Jessica, but it is. I mean, it's a pretty involved section. I think it's a couple pages. Article 8, mobile dental facilities and portable dental units.
Oops. Sorry. My mouse kind of goes a little wacky and clicks on random things. Let me pull up. Let me just pull up the Article 8 rules real quick.
The reason it's probably not on the radar.
Actually, we're talking about statute, Article 8 of statute.
Oh, okay.
3212.99.21 are some definitions, and then 3212.99.22 has information about the permits.
You said 1291?
99.
99.21
and 22.
Okay. Okay, that is very helpful. So maybe the answer then is when we're looking at your rules and we start talking about mobile dental permit holders or mobile dental facilities, we refer back to the statute.
Yeah. And actually, there's more. Yeah, it's 0.22, 0.23, 0.24. There's that. Yeah, that, as Sean said, it's a big article, actually.
Okay.
And there are also lots of forms on the dental board's website for getting the permit and all that good stuff.
Good stuff.
Well, Brian likes that stuff. I don't.
Okay. Give me one second. Where did it go? I thought I just saw it. Okay. So I'm going to say and then that's probably a comment that I will likely address when I do the final formatting and whatnot. Ideally, what I do is once we've gone through the substance of the rules, I go back through, I check definitions, I check statute references, I check, you know, cross-references to other rules, things like that. And then what I like to do is usually send out the final, what I consider the final draft, to make sure that I haven't messed anything up with those formatting changes. And then that gives you guys essentially one final bite at the language before you make it as a formal recommendation to the board. So this might be one of those things where I look at where it's referenced and possibly creating just a definition of what mobile dental permit means or something like that, and putting it to your, adding it to your definition section and just having it refer back to your statutes, something like that. But if I did do something more substantive like that in my final review, then I would certainly note it in the margins and, you know, draw your attention to that.
Sure.
If you guys are okay with that, then we will keep moving. This was a question I think more for staff and possibly legal counsel. And the question here was, can this be required by rule under the current statutory authority? This was a dental therapist may administer nitrous oxide analgesia as authorized by 1276.03b12. Is this a question that we still need to address before this draft goes to the board? Or do you want to leave this comment in there to be addressed?
This is Dayanara. I had brought up this question in a previous discussion, but the committee voted to include the nitrous oxide analgesia portions in the proposed changes. So given what we are doing right now, let's just leave it there, send it to the full board, and if GERC wants to come back saying this is not within the statutory authority, it's up to GERC, and then we can revisit it. But we don't need to answer that question right now, or, you know,
right,
until GERC comes back with any objection.
Okay. And then similarly, we have the same question on subsection C. So I will go ahead and remove that comment as well. Brings us to dental therapy consultants. Oh, so I had a note here to review the consultant rule for hygienists and dentists and denturists. I'm assuming just to make sure that they all kind of track similarly. So I will go ahead and do that in my final review and note any changes or suggestions for you guys. And then we're back to where we started earlier today. So we're done.
Woo-hoo.
Right.
Okay, thank you. Okay,
you're
so that brings us to agenda item number 5, the summary of current events. Is there anything that you wanted to add, Brian?
Nothing really, just that for the group's edification, we sent out postcards through regular mail regarding the new law that changes for renewals beginning in January 22 for the licensee's birth date, not the June 30th date. And we're doing that. We're doing email blasts, I think 3 or 4. They've already started. There's a couple more that will go out through the end of the year. And so that's kind of the big hot topic right now. And the board has to address a couple of issues, I think, in this next coming meeting. But there's a couple of licensees on the call today, so it's helpful to, you know, just to continue to get it out there as much as we can.
And this is Dr. Taylor, just for the record, to thank you, Mr. Edmondson, and your staff for all you do and the board in these times that we've had now in the last two years. Thank you again for doing just a great job. Appreciate it.
Yeah, huge shout out to Jessica. Jessica, thank you for guiding us through this. What a fun time we all had.
And to our committee members.
I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Thank you, Jessica.
Yeah, I really want to thank everyone. I mean, you know, this is like my Oscar speech. I don't know. but really, I mean, like everyone put in a lot of effort in this, and I really want to thank everyone. Dr. Taylor, Ms. Hardy, you have been with this process from the very beginning. Same with Mr. Murphy, Ms. Kappas, obviously board staff. Without them, we wouldn't be here. So.
Well, and you had great suggestions as well, Mr. Dinar. So thanks for being part of it.
Okay, agenda item number 6, discussion and possible action items for future meetings and agendas. I don't know that we're going to have future meetings.
Just so I understand and I can report back to the old building and loan, what's the story then? This now goes in front of the full board. What meeting will that be at, Brian?
December, I don't know. It's the one in December, and I don't know the date.
Okay.
Oh, it's not the November meeting? I thought it would go to November because we are on the timeline with the renewal rules.
No, because the other, not totally. I mean, anytime we can move these quicker, it's better. We can amend the agenda and put it on the November 5th agenda. We were anticipating putting it on December, I think 3rd is the next meeting after that.
Will that be something, though, just so I'm clear, is that going to be a virtual meeting as well, or is that in person? Is Bodex talking about going back in person, Ryan, or no?
Yeah, I don't even know how to answer the question, to be honest with you. So the board, we had a ton of technical difficulty in one of our previous meetings, and part of the problem is the ununiformity of the boardrooms. So every time we go into a boardroom and we have to work on figuring out those microphones, that recording device, the telephone system in that room, nothing is uniform. And so we set it up the day before and everything seems to be working well. And then it doesn't. And then we delayed the start of one of our meetings by like 40 minutes to try to get, and mostly because we didn't have a quorum unless the members attending virtually were could be heard and you could hear the members that were attending in person. Because of that, the frustration was from the board members that all meetings are going to be in person. They will make an accommodation for board members because there's 3 that travel from Flagstaff. But they're already making special accommodations for other people that have extenuating circumstances outside of their control. Which a full schedule and having patience is not an excuse that the board wants to hear. So there is some virtuality of some of these meetings, but for the most part, they're in person. But we could probably accommodate you, Sean.
Appreciate that.
Jessica, do you think this should go? I mean, I can amend the agenda. We'd have to do it between now and next Friday to add this to the agenda. What's your thought as far as the process goes on whether or not we should or shouldn't? And maybe the board member, there's only one board member right now on, Mr. Dinar. Happy to entertain your suggestion for sure, too.
I mean, I leave it to the staff because you'll have to, you know, do all of the heavy lifting on getting it on the November 5th meeting. I mean, if it's in front of the November 5th meeting, I'm fine. If it's in December 3rd, I'm fine too. It's just, you know, what's logistics looks like, I just don't know. And I would, you know, defer to your judgment on what needs to move fast and what can wait till the December 3rd meeting.
I think that's where we separated the rule, the notice of proposed rulemakings, to just start moving the ones that were already complete. And then this was the last one. And because this bill passed through legislation in like 17, which was 2 years before I was even hired, I don't know if there's a rush to do it in a month earlier. So I would prefer personally to do it December 3rd. But I think you guys are done with the meeting.
Yes. Okay. So agenda item number 7. Is there a...
Dr. Taylor makes a motion that we adjourn this meeting, please.
Sean beat you.
Second.
Sean will beat you. Sorry.
See y'all. Thanks.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
Take care.
Good work, everyone.
All the best. Thank you.